at this point in time, would like to call to order the special meeting of the Napomo Community Services District for October 12th, 2005. And would you all rise and join me in the flag salute? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, could you call the roll, please?
Director Horsey?
Here.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Nguyen?
Here.
Director Eby?
Here.
President Rahata?
Here. At this time, we'd like to open it for public comment with Commander Martin Basti of the South County Sheriff's Station. Good morning, Commander Basti.
Good morning, members of the board, staff, and public. Martin Basti, Sheriff's Department. Don't have a whole lot for you. One good point is the arrest last month of the five individuals down in Ventura County with the 27,000 pieces of construction equipment all but eliminated our construction thefts that we saw in July. Our investigators are working with them to identify it. Apparently this gang was working from as far north as San Francisco, clear down to the Mexican border, going through construction sites, taking power equipment, loading it up, getting ready to take it to Long Beach and ship it overseas for resale. So it was quite a huge operation. Ventura County got onto them and put a stop to that. And again, with last month, we only had seven thefts down here in Napomo, which was a significant reduction from the 30 that we had in July. So that is making an impact. And of course, as we get closer into the holidays, I'll bring some more information forward. Continue to be aware, especially during the shopping times, and keeping stuff out of cars, because that's going to be when we have a school break, going through cars and taking property or losing purses at the shopping centers, those type of things. So I'll bring you some safety information we do every year. Lastly, we just got a new piece of equipment that we're outfitting in all the cars, and that's a spike strip. Because a number of chases that we've had with individuals that have, and again, as we get more and more traffic, it becomes more and more dangerous for the officer, for the person fleeing, and for any other innocent folks. So we put together a study, and on Thursday, we're doing the first of the training. We'll outfit each one of the cars. So all 37 patrol cars will have a set. And the nice thing about the company that we're using, there's no remanufacturing of the strips. They're on a little string so that the officer can be safe, and they just throw them out and they can remove them for the next cars going through. And the company gives us one free replacement, plus if we fill out their thing and send the barcode off the used strip, they'll continue replacing them as long as we send them back the old ones. So a heck of a deal. And also the safety issue is the main thing, so we continue to get improve our safety, etc. With that, there isn't much going on, and that's the way we like it. We try not to let it get you know, but nothing of major consequences, especially down in here. And I'm glad to see your board is missing all the fodder from some of the other boards, so much appreciated. You guys are doing a great job. So, any questions, comments, or anything you need addressed? And thanks to Mr. Nguyen for the invite, having our folks available for the Oktoberfest. That was our rural crime folks, so we get that word out. They just did an investigation on some chemical thefts, and so it's really helping to have that rural crime out there.
Mr. Trotter.
Does the Sheriff's Department have highway chase rules?
Yes, we do. We have an extensive pursuit policy that limits us from ramming. If we can identify the suspect, we'll terminate the pursuit and follow him later. If he gets onto the freeway, we turn over the highway patrol for their expertise. But one thing nice about the spike strips is we can also deploy for other agencies. So if we're in Napomo and Aurora Granny's chasing somebody, we can go out and deploy the spike strips for them and terminate the pursuit. And what it does is it puts a quill in the tire, slowly lets the air out, but the car still maintains under control, and basically it limits their speed. Lots of them still continue going on in the rims, but the speed is the main thing. They get out and they can only go about 20 miles an hour. So it just is a real safety factor. But we do, and we review it every shift change. Each deputy has to read it and sign it, and we continually update it. So it's a about 12 pages long, and it covers both the vehicle code as well as our responsibility. And we limit the number. You see the some on the TV where there's 15 cars? We limit ours to 2 and a supervisor, that's it. Nobody else can be in it, so you don't have a safety issue.
Commander Basti, would you know offhand how many cases of theft you have for avocados out 166?
Yeah, the Sway Ranch particularly, we had 4 last year. There's 2 issues. First of all, we changed the way he picks them and stores them and moves them. And secondly, our rural crime deputy was in effect during that time, so we had the contacts. Previously, they were not reported. So you'll see kind of a spike increase. And I know the issue came up with coverage, et cetera, for that area, but again, regular patrol, plus now with the rural crime deputy, we can put some prevention things in place as well. So, but there was a spike, 2 reasons. First of all, they started reporting it when the rural crime deputy was there, and that at the time, the price of avocados was way up there. And what was happening is they were picking them during the day, leaving them outside the road, waiting for a truck the following morning in the bins. And so that practice was changed because it was kind of an invite.
Any other questions? Any questions from the public for Commander Basti? Seeing none, and thank you very much. Commander Basti. See you next Monday evening.
I'll bring you cookies.
Please. And maybe a few Band-Aids. Okay, well, I see we have our representatives from CDF. Would welcome your report. Please state your name for the record.
Good morning. I'm Fire Captain Alan Patchett. I'm stationed at Station 22, our West Napomo Mesa station. And this is my first time here, so bear with me. And probably be a lot of questions and answers. About the only thing that I know for sure that we have to report is San Luis Obispo County Fire and CDF took delivery of a new fire apparatus from Smeal Manufacturing out of Nebraska. We took delivery of that approximately 6 months ago and have put it in service last week. And so that new engine is outside for you guys to come and take a look at and ask any questions about. It's a really good piece of fire equipment. And I'm not familiar with your process, so if you guys would like to ask questions of the status of what we do and where we're at for the last month, please feel free. We've had minimal fire activity, vegetation fire-wise in the state of California this year. As you know, you've probably seen on TV, we've had, in the last 2 weeks, we had some significant wind events in Southern California. We did send equipment, both state and local county government equipment, from the area down to Southern California, Chatsworth and LA County, Ventura County, and Riverside County. The 2 paramedic engines that serve Napomo stayed. We did not send any of our equipment. That's a priority to keep those 2 pieces of equipment in the area and staff so we don't lose paramedic service. We've had very little local activity. Last week, 2 weeks ago, we had a small vegetation fire over in the west Napomo Mesa area above Los Barros Road, about 6 acres of grass caused by mowing. It was a reminder, it was a good opportunity for CDF and County Fire to remind folks that even though we're getting into October and some cooler weather, our fuels are still dry, and that we want to make sure that we have our mowing before 10 o'clock in the morning campaign out to the citizens. So we made a statement on the news when we announced that fire and the cause of that fire. Call volume wise, we're still pretty low. So, are there any questions or?
Mr. Wynn?
Yes, first I want to thank your department for sending people to the October Festival last Saturday.
Okay.
That was very, very helpful, and I know people asked lots of questions and got tours of your equipment and such, and they really, it was good. A question I would have is, we have a problem here with fire and grass and such inside the urban reserve line.
Yes.
And we have no weed abatement ordinance. We're not incorporated. We can't pass such a thing. How can we work with you to see that owners of the property get things mowed down so they're safe?
Well, what we have right now is we have the Fire Safe Council, San Luis County Fire Safe Council. Currently, what we're doing at the station level is a lot of folks are still unaware of some of the burning guidelines that Air Pollution Control has set up. And so they'll come in and ask for burn permits, and we try to educate them at that time on different methods involving the lots. And we do get a lot of weed abatement calls. I would work with, we could work with Battalion Chief Dan Anderson and the Fire Safe Council on education. It's kind of a hard situation if you can't put together a law or something to do that. And it pretty much falls down to education, advertising, and maybe the Adobe Press, things we can do at the station level. It's just really kind of hard for enforcement. So, but the Fire Safe Council is somebody that we work with quite extensively to handle those types of things. So that's something we can research.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments from the board, staff, public? Well, thank you very much
for your
presentation. Then at this time, I'd like to open it to the public for comments on any items within the district's jurisdiction that are not on the agenda. And for the record, please state your name.
Hi, I'm Steph Wald, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. We've been involved in the creek cleanups and the creek clearings in the last several years in Napomo, on Napomo Creek. And I'd like to just give you a quick update of the status of the creek clearing and cleanup efforts for this year. As I said, we have partnered with NCSD, Land Conservancy, our organization, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, and the community in past years for creek cleaning and trash cleanups. And this year, creek clearing, things like snags and debris jams, were cleared by landowners and the Land Conservancy. And I have a couple of thank yous to Justin's Tree Service, Lupe Esquivel, Tom Wheeler, Public Works, Paul Holmes at the Land Conservancy, and Shannon McNeil in the FFA at the high school also participated in helping to clear up some of those snags and debris jams in the creek. And then this year's trash cleanup was held in conjunction with NCSD with your community cleanup. This year there was no education fair as a part of that cleanup. And we got some disappointed calls from folks in the community as well as ConocoPhillips. So we'd like to be able to participate in a community education fair again next year, hopefully. We do have some concerns about what transpired this year, and we want to make sure that all the work gets done next year. So I would like to recommend that we renew our partnership efforts with all those who were previously involved in past years and renew efforts to make sure that all the work gets done. And finally, I'd like to just let you know, give you a quick update that the Napomo Creek Watershed Plan is in draft form, and we welcome your input. And if you'd like to get an administrative draft to take a look at that report, please do contact me at salmonfix4, SALMONFIX, and then the number 4, at AOL.com. And we'll be making a presentation about the Napomo Creek Watershed Plan at the next June's forum, and I have some flyers for you to share with your board on that. Be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions? No. Stephanie? Comments from the board?
I think I do.
Mrs. Worsley.
On the cleanup, you're saying that maybe we didn't have enough advertisement for the
no,
people to produce.
No, I think it was just different. And there, I would say we just need to renew our partnership to make sure that we're communicating prior to the cleanup so that we make so that everything that needs to get done does get done.
Then what I would suggest, Stephanie, is that you let us know when the planning is going to be conducted for that and let us participate in the planning.
Absolutely.
That would be very helpful.
And vice versa.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. President.
Yes, Mr. LeBrun.
Once we complete public comment, if we haven't already, maybe the board would consider a 10-minute break to take the fire department up on
yeah.
show and tell the new fire department.
That would be good. Thank you. Great idea.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. Okay, well, seeing no other public comment, we'll bring it back to the board, and we will, at this time, take a 10-minute break to see that brand-new piece of fire apparatus out front. Can we blow the horn and push the siren?
Let me stop the recording.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Well, we will now come back to order, and next item is the consent agenda. Items D1 through D6. And Mr. Nguyen, I believe you
yes.
had a question.
Yes, if you would pull item D5 for separate consideration, please.
Then we'll pull item D5 for separate consideration. Do we need a vote by the board to do that?
No.
I guess, okay, we will pull item D5 for separate consideration. Any other comments, questions regarding the consent agenda, warrants, minutes? Mr. Eby.
The check for IPAC.
Oh, yes.
$111,000.
I noticed in the past that you either haven't been billed from them or have been dissatisfied with their performance. Does this indicate that their performance is giving us something that we can use now?
Yes, it indicates that. Right.
Will you be telling us a little bit about that in your director's comments?
I can. Okay. Answer questions on that, let you know where that IPAC contract is
at. But you're satisfied that this is what we should be paying them out?
Yes.
Any other questions, comments on the consent agenda? Accepting for D5.
On D3, I will repeat a request that I've made for, the last 3 months in a row?
Last three times this was up. I'd like you to come in and explain to me what exactly you're looking for.
I'm happy to do that.
Thank you.
Please.
Natural gas is projected to go up as much as 50%. So I just want to be clear on that as a propane user myself. We'll see what happens. But that well is used, and we can control its use much better in the winter months when gas prices tend to peak because of heating. So it's really one of our high-demand wells, and we keep it running full-time in the summer months when our demands are way up. But in the winter months, that's when we take it down typically for maintenance, and we can then, of course, we're much more flexible here in about a month with our running the pumps and choosing which pumps we'll run. So it's a good note.
I would comment just in passing that item D4, I really appreciate the work that staff went through to put this resolution together. We haven't had to be quite so detailed in the past, but there's reasons for doing so, and I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
And that'll be resolution number 953. So with that, if there's no further comments on the consent agenda, we'd like a motion to approve with the exception of item D5.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Nguyen, a second.
Second.
By Mr. Eby, Madam Secretary.
Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worsen?
Yes.
President
Romero? Yes. Okay, item number D5 is surplus equipment. And Mr. Nguyen, you had a question.
I raised this only to ask, how we intend to dispose of them. And I ask it because in the past, before your tenure, Mr. LeBrun, there was kind of a, I don't know what you would call it, corporate culture, whatever you want to call it, kind of a feeling that, that when things were no longer optimal, that they could sort of go off to staff or private projects that staff liked. And so we had equipment that just kind of went off at bargain prices to friends. And we actually passed a resolution saying that board members and staff persons could not purchase equipment of this sort for obvious reasons.
Understood.
And so I just reiterate that if you're going to dispose of it, is it going to be a public auction? Will it be advertised? Is it, how does that work?
Actually, this is the old copier.
Okay, yes.
So this is the Mita copier. We have an offer from the Canon folks that they will haul it off for us.
Haul it off for free?
Haul it off at no charge to us, is what they're saying. That you can't get parts for this copier, and it can't be supported anymore.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, this copier is, I believe, in the 20-year age time frame. Now, then the copier that had been our primary copier is moved over to where this Mita had been and is our secondary backup copier. So that's, now we'll look, and I see Judith's head, I mean, I'd like an opinion. I don't see value in this Mita copier.
No, and I don't either.
And sometimes this electronic equipment becomes a financial burden to dispose
of. Sure, and it is. Yeah. Probably so, if it's 20 years old, I would accept their offer.
Because there are parts in there that contain hazardous materials, sure. PCBs and other items.
Well, and believe it or not, it's, it's like like your screen on your television. It's got a lot of lead in it. Like your garden hose brass fittings have a lot of lead in it. Those are considered hazardous materials.
And they can be taken for free every Saturday from 11 to 3.
Over there. Maybe that's where Canon will be hauling it. I'm not certain, but I think we'll be taking them all now.
Thank you.
Okay, with that then, we will need a motion to approve item D5.
So,
motion by Mr. Wynn, a second by Mr. Trotter. Madam Secretary.
Mr.
Wynn? Yes.
Mr. Trotter?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, moving on to administrative items. Item number E1 is the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. And Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. This item will include a presentation by Frank Honeycutt, who's with us here today from the County Public Works Department. Just in brief, then, before Frank gets started, we're asking for a letter of endorsement for the Integrated Water Management Plan. This integrates with the Proposition 50 grant proposals that the district has worked with the county on for integrated regional water planning. And an aspect of that grant proposal, of course, is our pipeline intertie with the city of Santa Maria. So with that, I think I'll let Mr. Honeycutt give his presentation, and then if there are any questions of either staff or Mr. Honeycutt, we'd be happy to answer those at that time.
Okay. Mr. Honeycutt, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for considering this on your agenda. We're also grateful that Mr. Eby and Mr. LeBrun could participate so well at RAC. I know Mike Wynn participates. He's wearing another hat at that time. We're also grateful for the work that your staff has put into this project. Part of our integrated approach here is that this is not just a county project, but this is a project where all of the stakeholders need to participate, with the district being one of them.
There's a video mute button at the bottom. We'll clear that screen. And
video mute, yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you see it? I think it's down there by the laser.
Just start pressing it. Okay, as we mentioned, the key words on this are integrated and regional. The This water resource plan or water management plan is intended to, we would integrate different kinds of needs and different kinds of sources. Traditionally, you have supply folks trying to chase after supply, you have habitat people trying to preserve habitat, and they're not always getting along, and neither of them are getting along with the flood people who are trying to get rid of water. This plan represents kind of a new approach to integrate all those things so that we can optimize water resources to get what actually everybody wants is the best of everything. Let's see. The front one.
That's a page up, page down. There you go.
There we go. Okay. With the California Water Master Plan, or the state's vision, pretty much has something for everybody, but this is truly the way the trend is going. They want to preserve water, basically, to promote public health. It's a primary thing, but there's also an emphasis on economic growth and preserving our environmental diversity and so forth. We won't dwell on that, but our regional vision statement is very consistent with that. We want to enhance regional cooperation and promote sustainable water resource management. Some value statements in there that we want to balance economic, environmental, cultural needs with property rights. One thing that I need to emphasize to you all is that this is a plan that it requires regional cooperation. It also recognizes, though, that each agency, such as the district, will retain its autonomy. And each of the other jurisdictions and stakeholders within the region will maintain their own responsibilities, but will cooperate with everybody else. We'll maintain respect for their neighbors and so forth. In 2002, the California voters approved Proposition 50. It set aside $3.4 billion in bonds for different kinds of water projects. There are a number of different programs set up within that. I might add the first one there called Water Security was a different program that different jurisdictions got to apply for last year. And this was not a regional thing, this was just individual water agencies. Lopez looks like, it's not sure yet, but it looks like they're in good shape to get some money to provide beefed up security there at the water treatment plant. The one I have there in bold is the Integrated Regional Water Management. This is the program we're talking about. They've set aside, next to $3.4 billion isn't very much, but it's something on the order of $480 million for projects that promote integrated regional water management. Our plan, I might mention that the trend in the state and throughout the state is this integrated and regional approach. Some of the things that are called for in there are not really new to our county. They are brand new to other parts of the county. For a long time, we've been in this county, been trying to think of these things. I might add that the plan was not, we did not make extensive use of consultants. We've used primarily county staff of the various districts, such as your staff. We figured that this would be more cost effective, and also, after the plan is finished, we didn't want all that knowledge to walk away with our consultants and go again on another project. Our plan here will be consistent with the county water master plan that's intended to be updated here in the upcoming year or two. And the big deal, the reason for our aggressive schedule is that we have opportunity to apply for grant funding. Now right now this makes us eligible for Prop 50 funds. What is likely to happen, the way we've seen these things happen in the past, is pretty soon that any time you go to Sacramento for money, or even a loan, you're going to have one of these plans in effect. And you can see how the urban water management plan that you all have to prepare has been affected by that as well. The plan is, or the program, I should say, is broken down into two different plans, or programs. We have a plan grant application and an implementation grant. On the plan grant, each application, you can apply for a maximum of $500,000. We submitted this application in May. The tentative results were just announced a couple weeks ago. Our application is pretty competitive. Out of the 52 or 54, I can't remember, applications, we're tied in 16th place. It looks like if you're 27th place or better, you're going to get money. So we're in pretty good shape. That is the staff's recommendation from at the state level. The director of DWR and the State Water Resources Control Board will be making their decisions probably next week, and so we'll find out if they go along with staff recommendations or not.
Frank, the groundwater banking plan, is that North County?
Yes. Well, the bank, if it works out, I mean, we still have a lot of study to do. The bank itself will be in the North County. The benefits of the bank will be...
It's a whole county.
Will be at least countywide. We may cooperate with Santa Barbara County as well. So that's why it's a local project, but it's a regional solution. Regional permitting plan, we've, within the district, within our the flood control district, we have a Zone 9, which is San Luis Creek and the watershed surrounding it. We prepared a waterway management plan that also cooperates ways to maximize flood potential, also to tackle vegetation clearing in a proper way. We would like to be able to apply that countywide. I notice, and maybe you're familiar here in your district, other places in the county, there are people who would love to get in and maintain the creek that's on their property, but they're afraid to. They're afraid that somebody from Fish and Game or you know, somebody else with a gun is going to come out and say you broke the law and whatnot. If we have a better plan in place, we can clear the creeks without destroying the habitat, so we can get flood control, we can get the kind of environment that we all like to live in as well. This would put money towards developing that program. We also, one that would probably be near and dear to your hearts and maybe other parts of the county is our data enhancement. That's specifically intended to address some of the data gaps that have been identified in our current water master plan, particularly in the area of groundwater, also in our other weather reporting. We also have a flood management plan. This addresses some of the non-engineering aspects of flood management. It's easy to get an engineer out and figure out where the flooding's coming from and all that. And it's even easier to get somebody to figure out how much it'll cost to fix it. It seems that most flood projects stop right there because they're too expensive or the community doesn't want that solution or whatnot. We're trying to develop a plan that will make implementation within the community more successful.
Frank, it says $500,000 max?
Yes.
These four add up to more than that, unless my vision's skewed.
Yeah, there's $675,000.
Yeah. Your vision's still good. What a requirement of the plan is that we have to provide 20% matching or 25%. So it just so happens that it works out to 500,000 is how much we need from that.
Mr. Trotter, please.
Fred, your groundwater backing plan, does that include retrieving the water?
Yes.
Or do you enhance existing wells? Or do you do both, possibly?
Well, right now, we've completed several studies. We had a different intention when we were studying the Paso Robles Basin. But while we're studying that, it turned out it looks like it's a good candidate for banking. What we need to decide now is a number of things. One, what's the best place to charge the basin, and then also to withdraw it. There'll be different things to consider, like you could charge it one place and you can withdraw it at a different part of the basin, perhaps. It also takes advantage of, as you are aware, of state water. We have an entitlement, or I guess we're not allowed to call it an entitlement anymore. It's a table lay amount of 25,000 acre feet. The state water project has never produced 100%. but this year we're up to 90%. This county is only set up to take 4,825, I think, acre feet. So there's a lot of surplus or unallocated state water. We have a mine that we're going to see if we can put that at the bank, and we can make the system much more reliable that way. So it creates other opportunities. We'll also be looking at, see if there's a way to bank some of the Nacimiento water and solve some of the other groundwater issues that are there. All of that will be studied, and of course, we'll need to wait and see how the study turns out, to just see how effective it is and see who would like to participate.
You know, you could bank for entities outside the county. That's possible also. You know, it's done in the San Joaquin Valley regularly.
Yes.
Just if I can add one thing, currently, when we don't use that 17,000 acre feet a year, we turn it back to the pool, and we're credited for $12.50 per acre foot. If we put it in the ground and leave it for 5 years, take it back out, we can turn it back for $125 per acre foot, which is way below its true value, but still 10 times what we're currently getting.
Also, when you look at if any of the communities within the region needed to get more water, that 125 would look like quite a bargain. And it'll probably end up being more than that 125 when you consider the facilities that need to be built.
I did have a question. Will you be working with the local watershed management groups, like the one for the Arroyo Grande Creek watershed, the Napomo Creek watershed, so on and so forth? These groups are putting together plans that sort of address flood management as well as environmental issues that affect the landowners, so on and so forth.
Absolutely.
In this whole process.
This plan doesn't work unless we have participation from all the stakeholders. And if any interest is underrepresented, then you know, we go back to our old ways of fighting with each other instead of working. So while I'm coming to you today, we have other staff that are going to our agricultural interests and our environmental interests. The RCDs are involved. The estuary has been very much involved in reviewing this plan. And then, of course, we don't want to neglect mentioning that the RAC itself. It has representation from all those groups. So this plan would never have gotten to you, at least without the RAC review, which has a pretty good cross-section. But even beyond that, we're going out to the different stakeholders, just like we are today.
Okay, well, thank you.
Is that one question?
Mrs. Worsen.
With that approval is scheduled in late October of this year. That's just not too far away, is this? So this is like an urgency type of participation?
This particular aspect is not urgent. We've done the work. We submitted the application. I mean, it took a lot of work to get there, but we've done it. And then we'll get our results perhaps next week or the week after. With that, then they'll set up a method where we have to sign contracts with DWR and figure out how to get that. So the money and all that will probably be coming, I don't know, later this year, perhaps next fiscal year. But the good news is that it may be coming to us.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
Okay. I'll get to something that's a little more urgent here on this next slide. The other program is an implementation grant, the one that everybody wants, because the most you can get, if you're very successful, is $50 million. And it's not money for studies, it's money for projects. One of the criteria for the projects, so the projects had to be ready to proceed. At the RAC, we formed a subcommittee trying to invite as much public participation as possible. We started with throwing everything on the table. What could we do? What should we go after? What should be done? With that, well, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me back up. We prepared the application. We submitted it in July, which was the deadline. It's a two-step process. First step is a conceptual proposal. We talked about things in general terms. Mike here gave us all the particulars about, well, we used to call it the Santa Maria Napomo Pipeline. because of the judge and the settlement, we've now changed it to the Napomo Supplemental Water Project. We've got the concept and all that included. Step two, and the results are promised in December. The state has blown almost every deadline they promised, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's January. But at any rate, the step two, the applications that are considered more worthy than the rest or more competitive will be invited to go to step two and submit detailed proposals. At that time, we'll need to present detailed cost estimates, detailed construction schedules, and all that. One of the things that we absolutely must have, and this is it's not really urgent, but it's timely, is that we have to have this IRWM, or what we've nicknamed the earmark, we have to have it adopted by December, or by the end of this year. It's slated to go before the Board of Supervisors on December 6th. Before it goes to the Board of Supervisors, it has to go through RAC one more time. And that'll be early November, which is why we're here now, seeking your endorsement. Also, in addition to any endorsement, it's not too late to make changes or additions or whatever if somebody saw a need. So we would take all the comments we've received, put it in a newer draft, bring that to RAC in early November and to the Board in December. And then when the state comes and says you're good enough for step two, we can say, well, we've got our plan adopted, so forth.
I have a question. Is this a one-time grant, or will it be periodic? Is this our only shot for Proposition 50 is one time through?
It's almost a philosophical question. There is, the way the program is set up is there are two shots at it. They're doing half money now. They'll go through the whole thing again, through a whole other cycle the second time. There's legislation up in Sacramento that I don't think it has enough support to pass, but almost, where they're going to throw more money at it. That may create a third cycle, or it may add more money in the second cycle.
But it's not a yearly thing. It's act that provides a certain amount of money essentially once.
Yes,
per act.
And Prop 50 was, you know, there's a ceiling to how much money they spend.
The reason I asked is I noticed in the scoring process for this that you got a higher score if your program is farther down the line. You had detailed designs and so forth. And I think had we been farther into our supplemental water design program, we probably would have scored higher and could have got more.
Perhaps. There are other, and I'll get to that in a second, there are other criteria that go into that. While there are two cycles, we figure as time goes by, the competition will get keener and keener. Right now, there are a lot of things that people have to guess at. Like, for instance, we talk about the region. The state went out of their way to not define what a region is. And some people think a region is several counties. Some people want to talk about one smaller watershed at a time. So elsewhere in the county there, one county may have several of these plans proposed. I think there are 9 counties getting together in the north. So when this first round goes through and everybody sees what it took to get the money, then everybody's going to sharpen their pencils, they're going to hire better consultants, better, I don't know, designers for the pictures and so forth. And so we're treating it as it's a one-time show. When the second time comes around, we'll treat that as the only one as well. But, in our earworm, we've identified 4 high priority projects. And obviously the one I put on the top of the list would be most interesting to you guys is a Napomo Supplemental Water Project. We want to upgrade the water treatment plant in Lopez. We have the Nacimiento Water Project, which I'm sure you've heard a lot about. And of course the Los Osos Wastewater Project.
How is the turmoil in Los Osos going to affect the viability of getting the last one?
We can only speculate. And at this point, while lots of people have promised to change the project, their project, the only thing that's submitted at this point is the concept of a wastewater project and the benefits. There's nothing in there that says if they change the location, whatnot, that, I mean, we haven't defined the location. On the other hand, we have defined the schedule. We've said that they have CEQA that they have. At the time we did this, it was out to bid. It wasn't awarded yet. And if they go and pick something that we're going to have to start over on the CEQA, their readiness to proceed is going to dwindle. And it's not clear to us whether we can just drop them from the application and redistribute the money. Somebody might suggest that our whole application's no good anymore. We don't know. We had Pavo from our office go and talk to Los Osos last night. I don't know how yet that was received. I'll just leave it at that because we all know what goes on over there. As I mentioned before, we can talk about how these projects were ranked. We began with throwing everything on the table. Anything that was to be considered included drainage projects, habitat restoration, whatnot. These four projects rose to the top, and these are the criteria. The CEQA to be complete by July of 06. When we started out, we thought we would just say, who's got CEQA already? But with your project, we realized that it seems to have community acceptance. The judge was looking on it very favorably with the settlement. While crossing a creek has its environmental concerns, everybody, you know, that creek has been very well studied. So we figured a reasonable risk that this district would be able to get CEQA on that project before July, which would be the end of fiscal year. We expect that the people who win in this competition will get money next fiscal year. So that's what we're talking about. 10% matching was, and by the way, these first two were pass-fail. If you can't come up with the matching, the project doesn't qualify. If you don't have CEQA, the project wouldn't qualify.
Where does the matching come from?
It comes from anywhere except for some other state program.
I mean, is it identified for Napomo where the matching is?
Rates.
I believe we described that it's coming from the rates.
It's coming from Napomo. It's not coming. Is it coming from the county is what I'm getting from?
No. Okay. It comes from the project proponents. Okay. I mean, it could come from anywhere, but in your case, the district. Right now, the district's expecting to put up 100%. We're hoping to defray some of that.
I just have one question. Sure. Curiosity. Disadvantaged community, we have zero. What does that define as?
A disadvantaged community is a community that where the average income is below a certain number. And pretty much countywide, if you have to look hard to do that, but if you split it up just right, we do have disadvantaged communities. You know, if you take, say, the whole city of San Luis, I mean, as a whole, it would not qualify, but they do have neighborhoods. I think the only one where the entire community fits the state description was Shandon and San Miguel. Oddly enough, there are sectors in Morro Bay that qualify, sectors in San Luis Obispo, portions of the South County that do qualify. So, if there was a project that could be defined, could be correctly defined as benefiting a community that where the only thing keeping you from going on with that project is that the community couldn't afford it, and it was a disadvantaged community, we wouldn't have to worry about the matching, and the points in that category would go way up, because each category is, I think, worth maybe five, well, in the state's criteria. They throw extra weight on disadvantaged communities. So there's a certain amount of money that has to be set aside just for that. But that's going to be an area where other applications are probably going to be stronger than ours.
The other thing about disadvantaged communities is we had to put this together in a very, very short time. And we were not able to get good data. But the preliminary data we got from school district says it's 42% disadvantaged in Napomo based on how many need subsidized meals, how many get the Head Start program, number of other criteria like that. The problem is what they needed was a different kind of data, and we weren't able to get it in time. So I think the zero there is a default. It's not a measurement.
The state did not dictate what kind of method we use. They did talk a long time about using the census data from the 2000 census. I don't know if it's the, I think it's the state or the federal government has defined the communities. If you were to use that and you were able to support it with that data, it was almost a no-brainer. Mm. If we wanted to use some other method, we probably could have. It would have taken a number of paragraphs and a few more pages in the report, but that's something worth considering. When we get to the step two, it may help as well.
On your readiness to proceed, Los Osos is moving earth and has stockpiles of supplies, and they're, and we're more ready than they are? Is that what that's saying?
There were a number of factors that went into readiness to proceed. At the time this was done, and we have to go back in March, they weren't moving any dirt yet. They had bids out, but they also had some court challenges that were that have since been resolved, but were not resolved at the time. Community acceptance was one of the factors that went into there. I have not, I mean, you guys probably have, but I have not heard any strong opposition to your project. I guess I could say I have in Los Osos. However, at that time, they did have a completed design and was out to bid. Nacimiento has CEQA approval at that time. The design's not complete, it's further along now. Likewise with Lopez, the design was nearing completion, but now it's out to bid, and I believe that they did award, or they're almost ready to award that. So if we were to do these scores today, it would come out differently.
I guess.
Mm. And Los Osos might even fall off the thing if...
we would go down.
But that is how it is. And then, you know, some of the, like the elements that are included, or the regional benefit. The project you guys have is a good project because it not only helps the district, but it pretty well helps everybody who's tied to the groundwater basin. Nacimiento has the potential to benefit the entire county. It's focused on the North County and the city of San Luis. I think that represents maybe 45% of the county's population. But there is some consideration, or it seems inevitable that some of that water will work its way further south, maybe to Rio Grande or whatnot. Whereas Los Osos, the regional benefit, goes beyond their district, but it does cover the watershed. It deals with saltwater intrusion, things like that. But it addressed, in the first category, the number of elements. It's not just a wastewater project. It's a water quality project. It's a, indirectly, it's a water supply project because they're making use of reuse or recycled water. Things like that. It's not just minimizing pollution. It's also got a strong, with the Morro Bay estuary being impacted. So all those things kind of added up. You can see Nacimiento and Los Osos came in neck and neck. Even though your project came in fourth, it still garnered a lot of points. So these are all strong projects. I should add that this is a first generation plan, and I always run the risk of making it sound a little too negative, but we noticed in preparation of the plan that although we had a team that had a number of engineers and environmental planners and agriculturists, we started with a very cooperative mood. Some of those healthy tensions that come out, you know, we realized there was more there than we thought. In working through this plan, we were able, at least on our team, to deal with that. We expect that there's going to be some more time before the rest of the region. I mean, there will be some engineers that just, for the rest of their life, they will not trust environmental planners. And there will be some, no matter what you tell a farmer, he's just not going to trust any government, period. But our goal is to update this over the next 5 years. It's actually a second generation plan. Will be even more integrated and more regional in what it's proposing. We want to be careful as we review what's worked and what's not working. We don't want to present the county as some sort of school teacher who's giving you a grade and is going to flunk you or something like that. We have to focus that each agency is still autonomous and is still responsible for what, you know, for their own. scorecard that will be developed over this where everybody can see what's working, what's not. We're going to focus on these four areas because if we figure these four areas are key to a successful project or a successful program. On the institutional effectiveness, it might be that the wrong agency, you know, we can use the Zone 1-1A as an example. It's not clear whether it's the state, but, well, people have their opinions, but the final analysis, it's not clear whether it's the state, the county, or the RCD, or some other entity should be doing the maintenance in the channel there. We've seen that we did have a solution that met regulations. We had an institution that would do it. It was going to be fiscally responsible, but the community didn't like it because that fiscally responsible part meant a lot of money several times more dollars than what they're used to spending. So that project is kind of on hold because the community didn't accept it. We could probably go through all four of these things in Los Osos and talk about that project. We could also, on your water pipeline project, talk about these four things. And you know that the CSD here seems to me to be the right agency to get that one done. It's going to be expensive, but it seems that we have a plan that's going to work. It's going to comply with the regulations and the court settlement, and the community seems to accept it. So all those seem to be a project that has every potential to succeed. It's not done yet, but, you know. And with that, I just add one more time. Anything that we have, not the county, but anything that the district or flood control district or that my office has could be found on the web starting with that address. And that would include a copy of the plan. There's also an opportunity on that website to add more comments if you think of something next week, something you'd like to add or change or just comment on. There's a way to do that there. So, with that, entertain any other questions? Hopefully, I'm sure there's something I skipped.
Any questions, comments, or to Mr. Honeycutt? And open it up to public comment. Any comments or questions from the public to Mr. Honeycutt regarding this integrated regional water management plan? It's a lot of reading.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Fred.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Frank. Seeing no public comment, we'll bring it back to the board, and we would then need a motion to endorse the county's integrated regional water management plan regarding Prop 50 funds, at which time then I'm authorized to sign a letter stating our support to their plan.
I so move.
Thank you, Mr. Eby. We have a motion from Mr. Eby, a second from Mr. Wynn. Madam Secretary, could you call for the vote, please?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Carter?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
Yes.
President Verhaeghe?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Honeycutt, for this nice presentation.
Mr. President?
Yes.
If I could comment briefly on the letter?
Yes.
I would suggest the addition of one sentence.
Okay.
After the first paragraph, it says the presentation was very informative and thorough, which is true. I would add approval of Prop 50 funding for this plan would be of significant importance in settling water litigation in the South County region. Or words to that effect. I'm not married to it. But.
That sounds good.
Okay. Anyway, any part of that you like, you could add on.
I think it sounded quite eloquent.
Thank you.
That always sounds much better than slinging the BS or something.
Eloquent's a nice word.
Okay. Did staff?
I think we got that. We go to the point on the table.
I've got it written down.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll move on to item number E2, which is a first reading of the ordinance for mandatory sewer connections. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. This is actually a second first reading.
Yeah.
If you recall, a month ago, we introduced this ordinance. We are reintroducing today specifically to recommend a change that staff has come up with here, and it has to do with, and of course, our district council, John Seitz, prepared this staff report. He's not with us today. This is actually Mike Seitz, as you all know, filling in here. And John and I didn't actually have a chance to discuss this. We discussed it, and then he worked up the staff report, and then I reviewed that, but not with him. But what came up is in the section of this ordinance that is changing, you know, a number of sections within our code, including, as we outline here, mandatory sewer connection, the clarification of when the district assigns fees, and also carries forward some policy that we've articulated in our urban water management plan. It's specific to the section that clarifies fee assignment. Our recommendation is the same, but we've added an additional exception, grandfathering, if you will. As we move forward from this point if we're successful in adoption of this ordinance, we will be assigning fees in the manner that's outlined here and making that clear to developers as they come in the door to apply and receive our intent to serve, that fees will be applied in this manner as outlined in our ordinance, and I'll go over it just briefly. The fee, an estimated, 100% estimate of the fee will be paid at the time that they request their will serve letter. And that estimate is based then on approved development plans, district approved development plans, okay? And again, that's 100% estimate of the fee. And then when the development progresses along, and sometimes this can be a period of a number of years prior to the development being completed, and now they want to have meters set. And it is that point when meters are set that the development that is being served actually becomes part of this district. And it is at that point that the final fee is calculated and assessed. And the consideration of the estimate that they made back when they had their will served is, of course, included. But this clarifies that procedure of the district setting the fee and when the fee will actually finally be assigned. And our intent there is that when we approve projects, if a project takes again, a multitude of years, maybe 5, maybe 10 years before it reaches a point of completion and actually putting a meter in the ground to connect to the district, it is at that point that the district will assess that final fee, and it's that fee for connection that is applicable to the project. That's when the project is connected. But it's important to us early on in the process to take that initial 100% deposit and plan for connection of this of this new development. This has come up, and I see some confusion, so I'll open for questions here in a moment, but the need to define this more clearly has come up as, of course, our connection fees for water have increased substantially last July through our ordinance in adopting supplemental water connection fees. And, of course, we're wrangling with a few developers that are on the other side of the line that they want to be from where we're assessing our fees. And in reviewing our current code on this, it's identified by myself and by district council that we need clarification here. So that's what we're doing. The change that we're making today to this ordinance is allowing an additional exception. In our ordinance on this fee assessment, we have, and if you can turn to the attachment to the staff report, we've included in all the language with the markup view. And so on page 4 of that attachment, we have the language that we're specifically suggesting change to today, and that is cause for this reintroduction. And again, it's under section 3.04.051, payment of connection fees and capacity charges. So we stepped through A, B, and C, which clarify these payments of these connection and capacity charges. No change there, but it's under the exceptions. And previously, we had a single exception for an applicant who has completed well improvements to be dedicated to the district. And this is in specific recognition of outstanding development that this district's approved, and made clear in that approval process that instead of paying connection fees, this developer would improve and dedicate, would construct well improvements and dedicate those to the district. No change there, but the change is bolded here. And this is for development projects that have the approved development plans, they've paid their fees. These are cases where we have, again, they paid fees years ago based on approved development plans, and they're in the middle of constructing their project. They haven't set the meter yet. One example, Summit Station. This came up. Summit Station, when they annexed, the folks were given a choice. You can pay your connection fees through your assessment district, or and have those fees set at that time, or if you choose not to do that, you can pay at the time you want to connect. So we had a number of people who said, well, we'll go ahead and tag that onto the assessment district. We'll spread it out, the fees set. Without this exception in place, if that Summit Station homeowner came to us next month or once this ordinance is adopted and enacted, we'd have to charge them the premium connection fee, even though their connection fee had, we had told them previously, your connection fee is set, you're paying it through your assessment district. When you come time to hook up to us, all you have to pay is a meter fee and the account setup fee. So we're purposely attempting to cast a broad net here, but we feel it's prudent for projects that are far along in their process. They have these approved development plans from the district. They have paid fees to the district, we should also consider those projects as grandfathered in. They were not. What we'll be doing differently going forward is making it very clear, articulating it very clear to development, and as we have done now in the past 6 months, as they've come forward, here's what the estimated fee is, here's today, here's how you'll pay it, and here in your intent to serve and will serve is clear language that says your final fee is calculated at the time of connection to the district. And without that language being clear and being articulated, and in fact in many cases district staff giving verbally a different policy approach, if you know, to development historically, we felt that it was just wasn't prudent to be trying to change these projects and request this ordinance change on, again, on development projects that are literally, you know, 3/4 of the way embedded through the process. So let me answer questions, because I'm seeing confusion.
Okay. I understood this until now, until you put this change in here that talks about well improvements. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of a particular case where a person hasn't paid his fees.
Has.
Where I don't think a person has paid his fees for a development, yet he is going to do well improvements on Dana Wells. How does that case apply here?
Actually, that project has paid fees. That project has paid fees. We're talking about the Maria Vista Estates development. They have paid fees full based on the time that they received their will serve letter. And so this the
so
fact
they paid all they're going to pay.
Yes.
And they have their will serve letters.
And
well,
they have will serve
sort
letters.
Sort of. They get to pay for the well improvements. That's
well, but those aren't direct fees.
Get reimbursed for it, but they don't pay the fees.
Right, we have...
New fees.
We have, within our annexation agreement of that project, they're required to pay fees, they're also required to do a number of off-site improvements, as we understand, water lines, sewer lines, to connect their project. In addition, they agreed to construct these improvements to the Dana wells.
Okay, I wasn't aware that they had paid their fees.
So the fact that they had paid 100% fee at the time and are constructing water resource improvements that will benefit, of course, both their development, but on beyond that, provide a tangible benefit to the district, that's why that was specifically written in there, to make it clear. That developer voiced concern that we'd be trying to assess, if you will, supplemental water fee to his project, and we said, we look back, you know, in our annexation agreements here.
Is that the only project you know that this applies to right now, or are there others?
Well, we have a number of development projects. Honey Grove's one of them, where the developers has long had approved development plans in place, a track map in place, and he's moving down, developing Honey Grove and selling lots, setting meters as he goes. If we didn't include this exception, the day this became active, the next house he connected would again be assessed supplemental water. And I want to be clear that the district, when we issue will serve letters, we set aside capacity. We've got a list. You know, here's our set aside capacity. We received money from that developer. He completed, again, in this case, off-site improvements that ran water lines and sewer lines down Honey Grove. And again, to change on him at that late a point in the process, we felt would probably lead to more legal expenditures than would lead to collections under this new ordinance. So that's, again, and I gave the Summit Station example. You can think of, there's developers in a number of areas where they've done a track, they've done the development, they've done the offsite improvements, and now I know of another case where the developer is building site by site, doing the home, selling the home, building the home, selling the home. But again, his will serve letters have been issued for all those lots in his, say it's a five-unit subdivision. And the fact that he hasn't set a meter in that last of the five homes, again, we felt that it causes more difficulty than it would solve our issues. And of course, this change all comes about because we have a funding model for our supplemental water project, and we need to cast this net as broadly as we can without being, you know, in kind of way that legal challenge aspect.
I guess my concern was that I had thought that all of the fees for future meter settings would be based on a supplemental water price, and now what we're saying is we have a bunch of will serve letters out there that paid the fees for, and those won't be paying the supplemental water price.
That's correct. There's little difference here, and it actually is on some of these larger projects. One of the issues that staff brought forward to the board earlier is that there were a number, maybe a handful, of will serve letters that were issued that were not based on approved development plans. We've already issued a large refund check at our last meeting in the order of $580,000, and retrieved one of those will serve letters. And actually, that was one of the biggest outstanding will serve letters, and staff feels very good about the precedent that set. So these were will serve letters, again, that were issued that were not based on it. So the developer does not have approved development plans, hasn't got to that point in the process yet. That's the difference here. What we're accepting, or what we're suggesting be included as an exception to these new rules, these clarifications, is our development projects, again, that have approved plans, that paid fees on those approved plans, and are now substantially along in their development process. Mm. This does not affect. We had a resolution on our consent calendar today. It would not affect that project. They did not have signed development plans in accordance with earlier resolutions and adoptions of ordinances that the district has done. This is really developments that are well along in their process.
Well, it sounds like the limitation here, though, is these are only people who are dedicating wells improvements to us.
That, no, the way it, we're attempting to have it read is we've got dedicating well improvements to us and or has development plans that are approved by the district, paid all fees and charges. One suggestion, I'll throw it out to council here, is that that I had that might further clarify this is where we read on and or has development plans that are approved by the district, paid all fees and charges. I think it might further clarify to interject at that point, paid all fees and charges based on said approved development plans. In other words, that and that of course is the procedure, but it's kind of saying it twice.
Well, that makes it crystal clear.
I think it does. It does help.
Now, and or means then that if they complete well improvements, they would not have to have development plans approved. Because or gives them the option of doing one or the other.
And
that's not our intention, I don't think.
Well, we want that again, that first exception is very limited to a single project, as we've discussed, and that project has approved development plans and has paid fees.
I do understand that.
Okay, and so but
if we want to make general policy to apply only to one individual, that's
right.
Going to come around and bite us.
Right, but what we've got to be careful about is that we don't, if it said and there, then the well improvement dedication would apply to all these projects also, and most of these projects don't do well. No.
Right.
Okay, so we'd need something there that, I don't mind both conditions being applied to the former, but we don't want both conditions being applied to the latter, because
exactly.
Again, we'll
there's
point
another
out.
One that may come up that in fact does have a major well and could need improvements in order to meet our specs, and so that's not the only time it's going to happen.
Well, right, yeah. It's not. It is general enough, but we've only got one active pending development that it applies to. I will point out also that on an empty lot where a developer has, you know, has done this development, maybe did a six lot subdivision, and he's got a lot sitting there empty that he's going to develop and sell. He has a will serve letter issued from this district. The infrastructure's in. The capacity's been reserved. It may be 5 years ago that they got to that point. To then say, well, that will serve letter, or the day we go to set that meter, say, well, that'll be another $10,000. Thank you. Again, we felt that would lead to more challenge than it would income. So.
Now, what I see here is saying is that basically fees will be set at the time the meters are set.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
But in your explanation up front, you said they will come into the district as meters are set.
Well, that's when they become... That's when
customers.
They actually become a customer of the district. That's when they actually...
Okay, that's when they become a district, but they are annexed in the district in terms of the area.
Oh, well, this isn't just annexed. These could be... Yeah, this is, in many cases, this development that's ongoing within the district service area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just because you're within the district service area doesn't guarantee you today's rates in 5 years.
No.
Yeah.
No.
One more thing on this. Has development plans that are approved. Now that could be in the future. Do you mean have been approved as of a certain date?
It doesn't mean the future, it just means present.
Well, has development plans, this when I read this 2 weeks from now, it could be are approved that day.
Ah, good.
See
point.
What I'm saying?
Okay, so have been.
Well, I don't know. Your intent, I think, is to lock a period in time now.
Right.
So
have been.
Have been when? As of when, though? I think you need.
As of the 2 weeks from today, the plan that was approved yesterday has been approved. So that moves forward too. unless you put a
date. I think what you're trying to do here is make it, lock something down so that a year or so from now, there won't be any, this one won't matter, because all of those will be behind us.
Right.
So I think that's all I want you to make sure of, is that you, that your language, your approval, it's stuff that's already been approved as of July 1st last year, or whatever date you want to fix.
I think it would be hard to try to fashion a date that meets what we're trying to accomplish here by saying a date July 1 a year ago. I think the date that we're talking about would be the date that this ordinance and these changes become effective.
Fine, that's a date.
Right, and that's not today.
Okay, but whatever it is, I think you...
Okay, and having heard what was... Having heard what the board has said, number one, this is a policy decision. Staff is kind of leading the way here. We're generally, we try to interpret your policy. But the interpreting what has been written and what the comments have been tonight, or this afternoon, this morning even, I'd suggest this, that except where the applicant has completed well improvements to be dedicated to the district and has development plans that have been approved by the district and has paid all fees and charges based upon the approved development plans, or where the applicant has development plans that have been approved by the district, paid all fees and charges based upon the approved development plans, and then continue on. That basically separates the two, make sure that the well, the person who's dedicated the well has had the approved development plans and have paid the fees based upon those, and eliminates any confusion about the and or that's in the present language.
That makes it very clear.
And I think in terms of when we have a cutoff and can specifically identify projects, as I interpret this, it would be when this ordinance becomes effective. So if you did your first reading today, you'd have your public hearing and adoption at your next, and then it's 30 days thereafter.
Okay, but did that include that? Did you put in have been approved?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, that would
have been approved. And since it doesn't really change the ordinance materially by having two paragraphs instead of one, they sort of say the same thing. And we don't have to go back for another first reading?
Or? No, we're making the changes today. If you approve it as amended. As I amended it, we can have our first reading today.
This is the first reading.
If we try to change it at the next meeting, that's where we start over.
Yeah, the only other change I noted would be back on page number 2, on the last whereas, where it says, staff report, this ordinance, staff presentation, and. I think the first and needs to get scrubbed there. That's just one of those, the word processor didn't do grammar correctly.
The procedure, I'm sorry.
My turn.
Mr. Wynn.
Thank you. While we're on a grammatical note, will serve and intent to serve should all be hyphenated throughout. Okay. So you can do that with a global change. It's simple. Next, I really commend you for doing this. I think it's an important thing that we do this. I noticed that the person who gave us our monies back last time is going to the Planning Commission tomorrow to subdivide that and sell it off. And there would have been entitlements that went with those parcels that we would have no knowledge of, and wouldn't know how much water they were using or anything. So. It's very timely.
And could put us in a real battle.
And that developer was very forthcoming.
No, I understand
that.
It was,
so I just want to...
No, he's a very honorable man. Yeah. I expected it of him, and I'm pleased that he did. Sure. But things don't always work out the way you hope they will. If I think just for a moment, in my role as a president of the Chamber of Commerce, and obviously I'm not seated here to do that, but I look at a developer who comes in, he has to get a certain amount of, he has to get a loan to do this, it's going to take him a while to do it. We give him an estimate. And at some future date, which he has not deliberately slowed down or dawdled, but for whatever reasons, it takes more time than he hoped for, and he's paying interest, we end up with fees that are double or three times what we originally estimated. That person's in a world of hurt. Is there any way that, and one of our jobs in policy is to make an orderly world out there so that people can make plans and not be, you know, attacked out of the dark. Can we put any kind of a cap on how much increase there would be above our estimate? Or is there anything we can do to make that a little more predictable?
I would say no. And the reason I say that, now, you know, we've had a unique, and I think it's unique, our water connection fees quadrupled, okay? And that's, but in order for us, as you all know, to quadruple those fees, we had to go through an extensive study and give basis, and the bottom line is, this is what water to serve your project is going to cost us.
Yeah.
And thus, that's what we're assigning as the connection fee for water now. So we've done that big jump. Will we have another big jump in 2 years, 5 years? I don't know. If we somehow capped, if we said, well, except, you know, if it goes up more than 200%, then that's okay. We're going to go ahead and let you connect. As you all know, the cost then of the additional burden of serving that water is passed on to our customer base. It has to be forwarded on with the development, and that's part of the risk a developer takes, and it is a very risky process that they move through. And, you know, I will remind, you know, it's in the last 5-6 years, maybe 10, there's been some very successful developers who have done very well. In the 10 years prior to that, there were quite a few who went bankrupt on property. Mm-hmm. And that's as the cycle goes in development. They assume great risk in taking forward these projects.
We make a good faith effort to give as good an estimate as we know how.
Yes.
And we all, if we're surprised, we're all surprised.
Right. And it's a very public process, of course, as we go to increase those fees. And so any developer who's in process is aware that, you know, I think it was no surprise to anyone as the district quadrupled its water connection fee based on the needs for supplemental water and the condition of the groundwater basin. This was a very publicly discussed, you know, on many fronts issues. So I would think that any substantial, you know, like this fourfold increase of our connection fees for the future would be, again, well discussed in a public forum and justified.
Then in section 407, 4.07, we talk about mandatory connection within the prohibition zone.
Yes.
And I certainly support requiring that a change of ownership. But our intention or our purpose eventually is to have everybody that's in a prohibition zone connected, even if they didn't change ownership.
That's correct.
So I'm curious if we might, is there any way of setting a sunset clause here saying as if it hasn't changed ownership by such and such a date, 2035, I don't know what it is, but something out there saying by this time everybody shall be connected regardless, is that doable?
I'm sure it's doable from a legal standpoint.
Is it wise?
Well,
is it
sure.
Legal?
You know, I really can't answer that. My initial thinking about it is that if this board wants us to try to set that as a policy, that we can try to effectuate it. I think the general way that these are handled, these are the way that the district can handle it on change of ownership. If the Regional Water Quality Control Board in a prohibition zone tells them that they have to stop using their septic tanks, that's what drives them in quicker.
Yeah, but we know they won't do that. they simply are not involved, they do not get involved with single households and their septic tanks. We've tried to get them involved.
Right. The exception being extreme cases, and there is one ongoing, you know, as you see, what's going on now in Los Osos is the regional board now at this point is, I think, reached wit's end and is threatening
But that's a whole region.
Well, no, their first levy of fines, they're saying they've got an $11 million figure that they're going to levy against the district. And then their next line is, and now we're looking at individual households that are discharging in the prohibition zone. But that's an extreme case. What we're hoping, we're intending to do here is get ourselves going in a direction. Obviously, if we could reverse the clock 10 years and had put this in 10 years ago, we you know, with a number of home sites that have changed. Along.
Well, we actually did have it in place. I mean, the terms of the grant that we got said it would be 100%. And then because we didn't do our homework.
But we didn't have a mechanism.
We said, well, you know, we'll call this number 100%, and not actually making a real assessment of who was there. And the number was too small.
I think that discussion, I've kind of read that one from two sides, you know, over the years, if you will. I'm talking about, Ed, we had this ordinance in place that required connection on transfer. The fact that we've had so many homes and the housing market's done what it's done here in our district, that we would have captured many of these homes.
Okay.
You know, but we can't turn that clock back. What we can do is put this ordinance in place. This would, of course, put a title entry on every home that meets these, you know, it's in the district, it's got a sewer line within 50 feet, and it's not connected.
I understand what this will do.
Yeah.
I understand what this will do. But yeah. I'm concerned that it's not going to do it.
It won't do it
thoroughly enough.
Well, and it won't do it all, and it won't change it. Now, one of the reasons that I didn't include, you know, just the mandate to connect if you meet the conditions of you're in the prohibition zone, this again a state defined prohibition zone for these septic systems, and the sewer system is in front of your home or within 50 feet of your home, you must connect. The reason it doesn't say that is because this connection, it requires the abandonment of a septic tank and the running of a lateral, and we just saw one go through that I think was on the order of 15, it's costing the homeowner 15, it was a property transfer, but on the order of $15,000 to $20,000 to abandon a septic tank and connect to the sewer system. So it's a significant amount of money, and many of these homes and home sites we're talking about are owned by folks who have been here for many years and are likely or in some cases on very limited means. And it is until they transfer the home.
Then they have the money.
Then there's the money to play, you know, within escrow negotiation to actually get this work done.
Okay.
The other work that we'll be doing as a district is we have areas within the prohibition zone that the sewer never was run into. We've never put the sewer in place there.
Many. Here in the business district.
Right, there's some here in the business district. They're over on Story Street and Widow Lane come to mind to me. Ashland is another one where folks will come in and say, geez, I just want to hook up to water. We say, you've got to hook up to sewer also. Okay, I want to hook up to sewer. Well, there's no sewer there. How do I get it there? Run it down there, we'll give you a reimbursement agreement. The tag or the tab to run the sewer, a sewer main in a street, even half a mile, is in excess of $100,000. So it makes it, that individual homeowner can't do it. One of the things with this in place, which will help the district know that we'll be getting these connections as we move forward, I'll be working with consulting engineers to look at these areas and define areas where the district can, in a sense, finance and put in place those sewers and then require the connections. We have some folks who have been allowed to do things that they're required to connect when the sewer comes across. We have a number of lots out there that I think will become viable for sale once the sewer's in place, and we can count on them paying in then to the reimbursement. And beyond reimbursement, then we connect sewer customers.
But you understand, we have businesses here within 30 feet of the street that are on septic.
I do understand that.
It's true.
I do understand that.
Okay. What about what about requiring it as a condition for secondary dwellings built on the site or any new plumbing additions?
Well, and it may be that the county requires that connection, but I think that that's something that certainly our ordinance could duplicate on. I think that's a good suggestion. So we're talking about, I don't know how we trigger that or form that, but and whether the county does or not, I mean, I think it's a good addition.
We could trigger it with a secondary because they have to have a will serve letter.
Right.
For secondaries.
Right.
Whether it's an addition of a second restroom or bedroom, bathroom addition, I don't know if we could ever catch that. That's different.
Permitted addition?
I think what this is causing is probably a continuance of this, and perhaps put it on your next agenda for another first reading. Staff will take a look at what you're suggesting and see if it makes some sense.
I hope we're not going to hold this over another period just for the
I'm content to let it go today and then come back.
I think we need to nail this down in time.
On the fee issue.
That may need to come back as a separate.
Okay.
We do another revision to it or something.
Okay.
Mrs. Worsing, please.
I would like to just clarify something, please. So you say that a project, say a 23-home project that has a will serve that was 2 years ago, and they haven't completed all of their lots, that they can set a meter at the old prices?
They've paid for that, reserved that water, and that's what I'm saying, is that we'd honor.
So how many projects are like that out there?
I don't have a solid. Well, we actually have
Summit Station.
Summit Station. I think there's on the order of, without in front of me, but we have what we call a reserve capacity list. The total on that list is on the order of 386. Now, maybe 80 of those folks, you know, we've seen a number who have come in and paid the new fees. So maybe 80 of those. So then there'd be 300 home sites, and I'm not certain if that's without breaking it down, an individual home site in Summit Station, somebody who's paid capacity through assessment district, or a development where, you know, five of the six homes, again, as I've outlined, I'm not positive on how, you know, which category, but I guess all in the same category of will serve, paid fees, approved development.
Okay, then maybe I'm misunderstanding this, but how can this balancing the capacity of growth with sustained availability of resources then?
Because the district made the commitment of will serve and the commitment that the capacity, that we had the capacity to will serve these properties at that time.
Yeah, even though that's not true today.
Well, even though today and now
we're an overdraft
conjunctive use, and we have supplemental water. If you know, unfortunately, we're not empowered to turn that clock back. I think our fee increase for supplemental water certainly could have come into play 5 years ago, when the discovery of conjunctive use and the need for supplemental water to return the basin to health was. At least became clear to the district. Now, of course, then it became the court process to make it clear.
I don't want to beat things to death, but on page 2, we have, as the board is aware, there are a number of reports that are on file with the district office that opine that the groundwater basin that underlies the district is not capable of supporting growth.
Right.
And then down here, we have the importation of supplemental water will provide a new source of water that will assist in balancing the underlying groundwater basin.
Correct.
So, but with all of our supplemental water, it wasn't supposed to promote growth. It was to sustain the groundwater basin. So this is where I feel like that maybe they're not paying their fair share after, like the district right now, the ratepayers are having to be there, the ones that are having the main burden.
No. The supplemental water project and its goals are multifaceted, and that includes, as you know, our first 3,000 acre feet of commitment to that project is to return the basin to balance. We've also, within that 3,000 feet, allowed an amount of water that would be for growth within the district boundary. And that's this growth that as we move through and we approve projects today and we assess supplemental water fees, they're paying in. These are new projects paying in for part of the supplemental water. We also include then additional supplemental water in our project for growth or development in our sphere of influence, okay, for future additional growth. So the supplemental water is doing a number of things, returning the basin to health and then maintaining it to health as development continues in our area. One of the reasons that the development is key to us is our funding model again. Working with Bob Reed, we shifted as much of the burden for paying for the supplemental water infrastructure to new development as legally possible. And that's why, as we move through our funding model, it includes the thought that we'll be having up to 80 new connections, or approximately 80 new connections each year. And those are 80 new connections coming in at $10,000 or $13,000 per connection and you know, feeding into, again, our funding of the supplemental water project. And that, and I know that there has been a substantial increase, really 25%, I believe, to the water, cost of water to our current customer. Without the new development aspect of our funding model, that increase, as we discussed in our workshops, would have been on the order of 50% in the town, and even better than that in Black Lake, to buy the supplemental water project. So it's a...
Any further comments, suggestions from the board? I'd like to open it to the public for a public comment on this issue of our mandatory sewer connection in the prohibition zone type and other things in there. Mr. Holloway.
Yes, Carl Holloway, South Oak Glen Avenue. I'm not sure that I actually was on a tractor when I was handed this, so I'm not quite up to speed, so my questions might sound simple, but the prohibition zone is within 50 feet of the sewer main?
No, the prohibition zone is defined independent of the sewer main.
Oh, okay. Well, a bit more specifically, is the property on South Oakland Avenue part of the prohibition zone? Before I even need to get involved, I just want to figure if it affects me or not.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. No,
I was told, I called the office and they said yes.
That was defined by the state what the prohibition zone was.
She said if the sewer line ran by your house that you were in the prohibition zone. That's what the secretary said.
No.
That's why I'm
no.
here.
The prohibition zone only applies within NCSD and Cal City's boundaries. And it's not all of Cal City's, but it's Galaxy Park and some of that area.
So it does not go down
South Oak Glen.
There's some of those mobile home parks off of Story.
Yeah.
You know, right there. This area right in here.
Well, and I was hoping to bring a map up on our GIS that I could share with you, but since it's given me an air description, let me run and pull that off. I've got one on my wall that you can look at to find your property, because the prohibition area does run along South Oak Glen and turn up the street, but I believe you're on the east side of South Oak Glen.
He's on both sides, but he's further south.
Okay, well, if you would, because I don't want to take up too much of the board's time, but I'll just address my concerns really quick, which might be food for your thought. We came down earlier to see if we could hook up to the sewer, and basically decided that wasn't going to be an option, and we proceeded to set up the subdivision, which we're currently undergoing, on septic. So then my question would be, if we're in a prohibition zone and this thing is put into place, are we going to then be allowed to hook up to the sewer? Because we're going to be mandated to hook up to the sewer. So then we'll be back to where we were 3 or 4 months ago. Also, other questions I was, is LAFCO involved with this ordinance, or have they been? Okay. Because we have, you know, we've have to use, there's a lot of overlying jurisdictions, kind of LAFCO, regional water, they all kind of, you guys all kind of overlap. And so we've gone to a lot of different people to find answers, and just wanted to know if they were being assessed of what was going on. Is this
for this ordinance? LAFCO is not involved in this because it's taking place within the district of the boundary. So the pink outline is the prohibition area. It's Highway 101, a mile. So it comes along the Highway 101 boundary, east boundary. Then it turns to the east on that lot just prior to Amato. And then up, gets on with the alignment of Amato and comes up to Thompson.
Okay, so it's your...
and I think you're...
It's your annex district.
Not necessarily. See, this boundary is actually part of our annex district, I believe. It's an urban reserve land, I'm sorry.
There you go. We own this piece right here, and we own these pieces here.
Right.
So we're not affected by this.
That's correct.
Thank you very much for your time.
These properties are outside the prohibition area.
I understand that.
That's what I thought.
But just to clarify,
yes.
We never refused to give you sewer connection, and you did not ask for water connection.
Contrary to what Mr. Hill is...
We couldn't ask for water connection because you have vehicles in place to stop you from supplying it. Your 5% reduction hasn't been implemented according to...
Just a second here. You were never turned down. You were never turned down.
Okay.
Yeah, we're sort of wondering, but that...
Well, I didn't come down here to argue. Yeah. We have a time... I have a real time constraint. I have to do something with a piece of property immediately. The difference between the subdivision and not the subdivision is about $1 million in my family's pocket. So I can't wait. I mean, that was the whole point. And we made that perfectly clear the night we were here. And we proceeded right along. So, I mean, I just wanted to make sure that this didn't affect us. And if you were, in fact, saying you're in a prohibition zone, sewer runs right in front of your property, which it does, and we're going to make you hook up, which to us was good news, because we're going to say, yeah. I mean, you know, fine, that's the way it should be. But,
Carl, we didn't agendize this discussion today, and I didn't mean to sort of head us off that.
Yeah.
You made a comment to us, and I just wanted to make sure you left knowing that we don't see it that way at all.
Right.
I'd like a clarification that has to do with this topic, and that is, who set the boundaries of the prohibition zone historically?
The Regional Water Quality Control Board did.
So it wasn't us, and it wasn't
the
LAFCO.
Right.
Somebody outside of us.
And that's why it overlaps our boundaries and Cal City's boundaries in some areas. It wasn't water district.
And that was based on a health and safety issue?
That's correct.
Yeah.
Failing septic tanks. It was set, interestingly enough,
soil.
At the same time that Los Osos had their prohibition zone. And these are septic system prohibition zones.
And this isn't the boundary that we have the latitude to change.
No. Absolutely not.
No.
We don't have any authority.
Was based on soil conditions, percolation rates, densities, so on and so forth.
And hysteria.
I said hysteria. But your land is considered ag land before you started your development?
No, ma'am.
No. So that's why I was thought maybe to anonymously check on this.
Well, we've always
because it could be the same soil.
But it's actually zone.
Right, it's zoned for what we're doing with
RS, right?
RS, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And yeah, we would welcome an opportunity to be a part of the district. In answer to your question, we'd love to hook up to both water and sewer.
I wish Jesse had asked at that time.
Well, I mean, it's not gonna, it's not too late. I mean,
we're way off the topic.
We're really way off the topic. And thank you very much, Mr. Holloway. Looking forward to talking to you in the future.
All right.
Well, and I've got our sewer prohibition zone. I've got a new layer on the GIS. I thought I'd...
Yeah, I've never seen that, so I'd be curious to...
Invalid description or something.
You didn't have the right name for it. You've got to put in some
pulled
keywords.
Pulled it up on my computer on my desk, but anyway.
Yeah, I think we're ready for...
Just a historic note. You know, one of these was not history. You didn't hear me. I said hysteria.
Right.
The community was told there was an outbreak of typhus, and we had this huge medical emergency, and it turned out there wasn't a single case, but that was after the...
I will relate to you, and I have seen photographs of septage, you know, failing septic tanks running down streets in this community at that time.
I saw it 4 years ago, right here in the Old Town.
Well, now, a system overflow or a septic
flood?
That was the 2001 flood.
Common, and I read staff reports that the regional board staff was doing at the time, and it was a...
It was, and
I think overall as a district, we're very happy to be where we're at. Our problems are small and compared to, again, a sister district or a sister area that didn't act on the same order and take it seriously and put a sewer system in place.
I was going to say that was in 1965, and I would be concerned he should check his... to make sure he doesn't have the same soil conditions where they'll come back and get him later after he's done his development or something.
No, where he's at, and actually I hope we can work that out, but he's still on the dune sand. It's one of the expressions that comes west, east of the freeway, and by not being able to connect to us, his zoning is limiting him to one dwelling per acre, and that keeps him out of the
residential suburban.
Right.
So he can have a septic system. So I think...
Procedurally, he's going to tell us what to
Yes.
Yeah, procedurally, you want to make a motion to it for the first reading of this ordinance and to set the public hearing at your next meeting, which I believe is October
26th.
And I would ask that you read it today by... make a motion that you read it by title only.
And I move that we adopt the amended... the amendments to this, as were mentioned today, do the first reading at the next meeting.
Second
reading. No.
First meeting today.
Read it by title only today, and adopt it. Have the second reading at the next meeting.
Second reading and adoption at
adoption at the next meeting. That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Eby.
Second.
We have a second by Mr. Wynn. So, Madam Secretary.
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Mayer?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Wilson?
Yes.
Director Hyatt?
Yes. Moving on to item number E3 is the formation of a subcommittee for...
We actually do have to read the title.
Mr. Seitz.
Napomo Community Services District Ordinance Number 2000- Prohibition Zone Connection Fees Procedures and Ordinance of the Board of Directors of the Napomo Community Services District amending Title 3 and Title 4 of the Napomo Community Services District Code to establish new procedures for payment of district water connection fees and procedures for connecting to district sewer mains within the prohibition zone.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. Do we want to take a short break here?
It would be nice.
It's 11:05, no later than 11:20. Is that okay
about
with you, Judy?
About 7 minutes. About 7 minutes.
A 10-minute break shall last no longer than 15 minutes.
11 subcommittee to... for the county in-lieu parking proposal that we were apprised at our last meeting. Mr. LeBrun.
Thank you, President Verheilig. And your introduction about covered it. The county, of course, came to us in the last meeting, at our last regular meeting, and pitched, if you will, a proposal for the district to consider taking over a in-lieu parking district here in the Old Town area to support commercial development that might want to, instead of taking the parking spaces on in their development site, pay for an in-lieu fee and have off-site parking. So as a first step in that process, the board directed staff to put an item on the next agenda for forming a subcommittee to further that discussion with the county. That's what we're here to do today.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the board regarding this?
I've got a question. Probably it'll come out in the subcommittee. But taking this on requires us to adopt our park powers?
No.
It doesn't?
Not at this time, no. We're just going to do parking first.
Okay, so if it were only parking with landscaping, we don't change our status, correct? We don't adopt park powers for that?
I understood that when I read it, that it did.
We would have to have park powers in order to take this on finally, but not to start negotiating.
But what we have to have, that's what I'm interested in, the final thing. If we were going to go ahead and build something out, parking lots, landscaping, parking lots, landscaping, would we have to have the park powers to do that?
Yes.
Yeah, at that time we would want to.
And once you get those park powers, does that give you all of the park powers that you need, or is there different levels of park powers?
No, I'm trying to remember what part that is under the community service district law in terms of the powers and how it reads. But you get the whole thing when it's granted to you by law.
It's only one kind of powers and you get it all.
It's activated opposed to latent.
Okay. Yeah.
But it is a single line, park powers, I think, as opposed to
parking powers.
Parking, or I think maybe parking. Greg Deeb was thinking about is maybe there's, you know, park maintenance power.
Well, I didn't know. Didn't know if there were different levels or
no.
You just do it once.
Park powers.
So how does that park powers relate to parking powers?
Well, if this were strictly a park, conceivably we could use our roadside landscaping powers to do the landscaping, but we really couldn't do anything else because special districts don't have a separate line item that give them parking utility or other such powers. But these actually will be parks as in the general plan and in the Old Town plan. And parking will be part of them, just as they're part of community park and other parks.
So what you're going to, what this is, would you develop a park with parking around it that the developers would pay an in-lieu fee for it? So you would have a park setting
that's
with
up
park
to the, that's up to the community and the county to define. And plus, well, for the county to recommend and the community to define. But the proposal that was presented to us was for in-lieu parking.
Right.
And if we negotiate with the county based on that first for transfer of title of those two pieces of property and associated anything that we can weasel out of them. Hmm. And then once that's done, then we can look to the community for exercise, if they so desire, exercising park powers.
I just so it's kind get of a it. Roundabout way to do something.
Yeah, I don't want to say, hey, we're going to make a park to it at the same time, and then they get all excited and say, well, now we'll revalue those properties at this cost.
Because I had a logical problem with exercising park powers with parking lots. It, to me, just doesn't go hand in hand, because if a lot of parking is just not for children and parking. Parks,
right.
Unless you want to fence them in.
Some of it's ugly.
Yeah.
Well, if you sort of looked at the design that the county had in their proposal, most of the parking would be here with very limited, what I would call more landscaping to go with it. whereas on the other side, there were only one area way in the back where they had maybe 9, 10 spaces, something like that, and the rest of that would then be park. So that would be a true park over there, this, because the lift station is not what you would call a very aesthetic item to have in the middle of a park.
It's interesting. It's certainly not today, but I think as the plans come in around it. But as I'm becoming more familiar with community infrastructure, you start realizing that, I go to that park, I didn't realize it. But that's why there's so much parking at the park. That's an in-lieu parking area also with the park. And, that building that I never paid attention to before, that's a well building, or no, that's a lift station. Or actually, you know, we noticed these things because that new lift station went in and a barbed wire fence went up around it. It made it pretty clear that what it was initially. But I think once they get worked into the community and proper landscape, then people don't think twice.
Talk to us about that barbed wire fence, you're touching a sore spot.
Oh, I know, and it's not up there anymore.
Especially for...
But even the chain link was specifically forbidden by this board on two votes.
Right.
Especially, it's a very... The button of one of the directors on this board...
I didn't intend to get off track here, but to make the point that actually some of these community service facilities are... I think it often is integrated with parks, and I think we'll have additional opportunities in the future as we look to easements for our pipeline, our major pipeline projects, and facilities to support those projects. To say, pipeline easements can also be parkways and these types of things. So this is a step toward, I think, taking on increased responsibility and powers in our community.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. LeBrun. Any further discussion?
I've got just one comment. It doesn't have anything to do with forming a committee, but it does have to do with what the entity will end up being. It's my understanding that the county's plan is to make this a parking area that relieves the burden of developers around here from putting parking on their property.
Gives them an opportunity to relieve that burden.
That being the case, why a developer would take him up on that and would forever have minimized parking on his property. If this property then that was designated for a certain number of parking spaces, we ever wanted to do something else with it, and we wanted to remove those parking spaces and put something else there, like a city hall or something, would we be precluded from doing this by the county because we gave up parking spots over there to put them over here, and now we're taking them away? Would we be in a restriction? I guess what I'm after is, once you've dedicated that to a parking lot, does it have to stay that forever?
No.
You'd have an input. If there's any change in the format of the procedure, you would have a chance to participate.
Nope.
And possibly veto power, because you're so deeply involved in this thing.
In the first place, I would hope that this committee has a mandate from the board, because normally if we create committees, we say, here's what we want the committee to do. Mm-hmm. I would like to see it restricted just to talking about these two parcels, sort of not just
point.
Go charging out into the mesa with parks on our minds.
At this point.
Yeah. And I would like to see one of the things that we mandate is that we will only pursue this on the condition that the title of these be turned over to the NCSD.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's going to remain in county ownership and county design, if we approved it, we'd just be putting Mr. LeBrun and his staff to work for the county, which makes no sense at all.
And we would also work for the county.
And we would be doing so also, yes.
Decisions regarding it.
And then inject and maybe try to respond to Director Eby's question a bit more, in that if we set up in-lieu parking as a portion of that parcel out there, and then in 10 years from now the district is incorporated and wants to build a city hall there, I would think that the district obviously would have to, if we were going to remove 20 spaces of what had been defined as in-lieu and paid for as in-lieu parking, we'd have to replace those with 20 spaces somewhere else in the immediate
in the parking district area. That's what I was...
Yeah, I would think that that would be prudent. I mean, we'd have to, or else we'd end up with a downtown area that has no parking.
You can address every one of these issues in your contact with the county.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly, which we will need to do.
Yeah.
Good.
So with that, we need a motion to form a subcommittee. Mr. Trotter and a second, Mr. Wynn. Okay, Madam Secretary.
Mr. Trotter?
Yes.
Mr. Wynn?
Yes.
Mr. Corsi?
Yes.
Mr. Eadie?
Yes.
President Hyland?
Yes. Now, it falls upon my purview to appoint members to the subcommittee. And I would like to ask Mr. Wynn if he would like to chair this subcommittee. And I would also like to appoint myself to be on it, since I've done much of the pushing and shoving of the county to get us this far.
Excellent.
So Mr. Wynn is chair, and Mr. Verheilig is also ran.
The power behind the throne, as it were.
Not really. But anyway, thank you, Mr. Wynn.
That would have been my choice, too.
Okay, then we have a manager's report, Mr. LeBrun. Very, very succinct.
Thank you. I've basically made a few notes here, and we'll try to address some questions I heard earlier, and of course address any other questions that come up at this time. As the board is aware, I attended the CSDA conference at the end of September and then took a week of leave and returned to work this past Monday. And both the conference and the vacation were very successful. Additionally, on the calendar going forward, the water softener issues out at Black Lake, the use of self-regenerating water softeners continues. I have a meeting this Friday with the Homeowners Association Chairman, Mr. Dave Weitzel, and then on next Tuesday, I believe it is, there's a meeting of the community, which I'll be attending and expressing again our position in regards to the self-regenerating water softeners. It, really no change there other than those meetings upcoming. Our urban water management plan.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
On that briefly?
I
understand from what you've told us before that the state says you cannot, because they've had lobby groups and such that have prevailed, we can't simply outlaw salt regenerating water softeners.
The ordinance that we have in place was vacated or made ineffective by the state in 1997.
You can pass a new ordinance. You can.
Yes.
But you can't make it retroactive.
No.
That's
well,
correct.
No, you can in this respect. You forbid them from using them. You can't forbid them from installing them. You forbid them from using them.
No, other way. We could. First, there's a serious threshold of study required for a new ordinance that we didn't meet on our past ordinance and would cost tens of thousands of dollars to accomplish. The new ordinance would not be able, would have to grandfather in any softeners that are in use to the date of the adoption of the ordinance and could prohibit future installation.
So just as we did with the prohibition zone, if there's a change of ownership or such, they would have to take out the old one?
That detail, I wouldn't know whether they could say, well, that old one was there and that's grandfathered in, comes with the home. I don't know. The path that we are headed down, and John and I, when he gets back, he'll be back in the office Friday, and I'm hoping to meet with him on Monday. Basically, the path we're heading down is look, we're being exposed to fines because we are violating our waste discharge requirements at our wastewater plant. That violation is, by every water quality expert I speak with, is the most likely cause is self-regenerating water softeners. Now, there is a lobby that is by the self-regenerating water softener industry that was successful in vacating these ordinances, and of course they have different opinions on these things, but they're the only ones. The regional board agrees. The the experience that the city of Santa Maria had as their self-regenerating water softeners came offline, and many other communities, is a proof to the fact that, that self-regenerating water softeners raise the level of salts and chlorides and sodium in the discharge and above limits. So what we're doing at this point is we're working with the Black Lake Village Council. They will be taking forward an ordinance, I believe, lack of a better term, for their CCNRs, which did not include this prohibition against self-regenerating water softeners. Appears to have been an oversight, because way back then the regional board was saying you shall. Of course, when Black Lake was transferred to us, the regional board saw that again, saw that there was not a specific discharge, a prohibition to these self-regenerators, and required that the district then at that time adopt one, and we did, of course, vacated again in 97. But the point being, educating the community as a whole, and then John and I were discussing a way of basically making it clear to the community. One is I will be getting a very rough engineer's estimate of what it would cost for the community. You know, the district would do the project, but of course it's assessed to the Black Lake community on their sewer plant. But to treat the effluent water for salts, and it's a multi-million dollar, you know, type of proposal. Say, okay, here's one route. We could do this. The assessment to every individual DX. Or the fines could come, and if the fines come, if you show us that you don't have a self-regenerator, then you wouldn't, we'll assess, I don't know, basically show them some numbers of what passing on the fines would mean to individuals, and then appealing again. That
all I know is that right. I hope that they will be, I hope they will assess fines, and they won't.
The regional board?
Waiver on that. And the reason I say it is, if 30 years ago, when the regional board told Los Osos they had issues, and when 2 years later they hadn't done anything, if they had started fining them on a daily basis right then, as they could have, they'd have had a sewer system out there for 25 years now.
The state board has copped out.
Exactly.
They had the authority to do things they didn't do. That's what you just said.
Yeah.
Now, recently they have said, Mike should comment on this, that they don't have the staff to enforce it. That's ridiculous.
When we asked the Regional Water Quality Control Board if they had inadequate staff, and we said we would go lobby to see if they got more money for the staff, they said we have plenty of money, but we just don't want to do that stuff.
There's another dimension to this thing, Larry. Mm-hmm. And John Sykes and I have talked about this a great length. If you send everybody at Black Lake, and possibly even in town eventually, you send them an affidavit saying, I now pledge that I do not own or operate a self-regenerating water machine, mechanism. And if they don't sign that and return it, you tell them they're subject, it implies that they have one of these machines. And you'll be subject to a fine. Now, what a lot of people will say, especially Black Lake people, will say, that's Gestapo. We're not going to, on a principle, we're not going to sign this thing. So
let them pay.
When the state assesses the fines.
There are many remedies, but they're all extreme. Mm-hmm. But the best one that's being neglected is the state board. They must act here.
I didn't mean to stall your manager's report. My real concern was simply, as far as you understand, will the Regional Water Quality Control Board take steps, or will they just keep talking?
I think there are a number of headlines in the news that show the Regional Board is willing to take steps. They have not against Napomo. I think it's kind of one of those things, careful what you ask for. Mm-hmm. I feel like we'll have a real opportunity when we bring on supplemental water. As I've explained to this board, the salts discharge is much greater at the Southland plant. The town division has a much greater salts problem from a water quality standpoint. That's our groundwater basin quality.
Yeah.
The difference is that the
the discharge permit that we have from the state, from the Regional Water Board at Black Lake, is more restrictive because the end use is going on the golf course.
Right.
I would expect when we see a permit revision to our Southland facility, which is overdue, we have the same staff person as Los Osos does.
Good.
So it's good, but that's where that person has been for these recent years. But when we have this revised permit at Southland, I would expect salt limits. And when we bring in supplemental water, and this is what the city of Santa Maria did, I was the staff person at the regional board at the time for the city of Santa Maria when they were exceeding their salts limits. Mm. Had been for years. I says, new staff guy in town, Dwayne Chisholm, I'm going to take you to task, get it fixed. Dwayne and I had a good laugh about that last week or the week before when I was down meeting with him on supplemental water issues. You know, how the table has churned, and he's aware of our salts problem. We're working with Santa Maria staff for some resourcing. However, when they brought in supplemental water, then they really pushed their public campaign about saying, hey, you know, your water rates have gone up for this new state water. It was for the Empire State Water. However, if you'd like to drop some of your costs for water supply, you don't need that water softener anymore.
That's right.
Turn it off and give it a try. People turned them off. Their salts limits their salts discharge came within limits at their wastewater plant, and people threw out their water softeners within 6 months to a year as they realized that this was true, that their water had become much softer, higher quality water. We'll have an opportunity to do that when we complete our project and connect. Interesting note in the way our system supply works is that, of course, those homes that are nearest our connection to the city of Santa Maria, which will happen, of course, in the southern part of our district, will receive the greatest of that benefit. They'll receive pure, if you will, Santa Maria water. As you get further out to our well supply field, which we'll still be using for approximately 30 to 40% of our supply, those homes, Black Lake included, will be seeing less of the actual Santa Maria water. Their blend will be much more like it is today, of the groundwater quality. At that time, I'm thinking, we'll have an opportunity to see that our supplemental water benefit is not equally spread across our district. And maybe at that time we can consider some sort of, you see a number of communities do this, they offer incentives for people to get off of these self-regenerating water softeners. I think one of the biggest complaints or one of the biggest issues underlying some of the folks out in Black Lake and their defense or arguments against this is that they probably just spent $3,000 or $4,000 within the last year or two on a new water softener, a self-regenerating water softener. And they're saying, hell no, I'm not going to get rid of that. I just sunk $4,000 in that. Now, if we can come up and provide an incentive that's based on, you know, trying to equalize this benefit of our supplemental water. So you see where I'm going. I think we have opportunities to resolve this issue on both the Black Lake and as a town as we move forward. And right now, the approach we're taking is good public outreach, and we're documenting that. I'm sharing that with the regional board, and they seem to be either overwhelmed by other work or satisfied by our approach to community outreach and education on this issue.
Mrs. Morrison. But when you use the water softeners, doesn't it cut back on the calcium deposits and that people experience within their pipes? And
because
a little.
Yes.
I had a water softener way back in Saugus, and it really cut back on the
right.
deposits.
Depending on the hardness of the water, and that's right. That's the whole point of it. It pulls the calcium out.
Because this can run some beautiful faucets and your... A lot of things yep. turn different.
So there's a reason people have water softeners. And then we get into the difference in the two water softeners and the canister type, and that when those need to be recharged, they're pulled out of our watershed, that the calcium that's been removed is discharged off into the ocean outfall or something. In a self-regenerator, all those the calcium that's been removed ends up getting flushed right back into our sewer system and put back in our groundwater table. So it's a no gain on the calcium, and then it adds a whole
sodium chloride,
potload of chloride, and
I'm going to have to put a big. You guys are picking on the new guy here, and Ralph Brown is kind of rolling in his grave right now, thinking about what. what he meant by the Brown Act. If we're going to have these lengthy discussions regarding water softeners and what we should be doing about them, it needs to be agendized. This is intended to be the manager's report, and I notice that water softeners are not even mentioned as a subcategory on that. And I think we need to get back on task.
Thank you, Mr. Sykes.
And I have no subtitles under my master's report, so I don't want to get in trouble, but I should be delivering information, and I want to give an update on our supplemental water pipeline. I have a report in from Cannon Associates that is a supplemental report, update to our schedule. I've glanced at that, but haven't had a chance to discuss it yet with the consultant. I'll be setting up a meeting to do that as soon as possible. At that point, I'll be looking to sit down with our subcommittee, and I think where we're at here is it's time to develop a comprehensive request for proposal for engineering support of this project. As you know, at this point, Cannon has been supporting us with preliminary engineering, but we've done that task order by task order kind of piecemeal. We're at a point now where we've defined the project, and it's time to bring on engineering consulting to carry us forward in a comprehensive mode. So that will require a substantial request for proposals, which this preliminary work will help us to write up, and then we'll go out for proposals. And then I expect.
When will that meeting be?
I haven't been able to get in touch with Ernie Ray at Cannon yet since my return on Monday. But I will set up a meeting with him and
approximately the next 2 weeks.
I'm hoping next week that I'll be able to contact the subcommittee and set up a meeting for next week, maybe a week after, for the subcommittee with Ernie, and maybe without. I mean, to really to develop a request for proposal document that I know Cannon will bid on, but we're going to look for others. We're going to open this thing up. They know that.
Want to put it
they've known that
out.
All along. Additionally, on that, I've heard from the Home Builders Association. I had a conversation with Jerry Bunin, and he tells me that they're forming a limited liability corporation that is going to come forward to the district with a proposal for building this pipeline, as they've expressed to us previously. But they've, after meetings, I think they've addressed some of our concerns and issues with that proposal and want to come back and re-pitch it. I've also had a review of state and federal grants and loans that are available for our pipeline project done by Cannon. They're at a draft stage on that. We've exchanged some voicemail, but not talked voice to voice. But we're going to have a meeting on that. I'm going to review that draft, give some direction, and then we'll expect to see a final report on other grant and loan possibilities for our pipeline project. We had a meeting, this is on the pipeline also, there is I think many of you may have read in the paper, there's a landowner in the south part of our, extreme south part of our county here, who is asking the Board of Supervisors for detachment from Santa Barbara County so he can attach a detachment from San Luis Obispo County so we can attach to Santa Barbara County, and namely the city of Santa Maria, to, as he's at least saying right now, to better protect his avocado grove. But I think likely that there's some development underlying there. Interesting note there, in that, as I understand, this gentleman made significant money in the water banking business out in the Central Valley, is where he comes from. So he's very versed in water banking and water rights and water supply. And, he's come forward to the district also with a proposal or via not really. He hasn't come to the district, but through our supervisor, proposal to in some fashion, it's not even a clear proposal, but to build a pipeline or bring the water across, hand that to the district or to the county in consideration for being detached. And we met with President Verheilig and Director Eby and myself met with the county supervisor yesterday and outlined a number of concerns there. I don't feel that proposal, lack of better term there, is is something that we're very interested in, and I don't think it's something that has really been thought out by the landowner at this point. So I want to give that point. CEQA's progressing. Again, I've had a voicemail to and from Doug Wood, our CEQA consultant, but a number of the categories, archaeological, geology, have been complete. I've got to meet with our urban water management planner on our final numbers, forward those to Mr. Wood, and he says that once we complete that, and I expect to do that within the next week, that he will need an additional 3 weeks and have an administrative draft to us of our CEQA for our pipeline project.
Rough date, mid-November,
maybe?
What month?
That would be, yeah, mid-November.
Mid-November.
For administrative drafts.
So that's not too far off track.
That's not too far off. I did mention the urban water management plan that I've, again, in trying to contact, we've exchanged voicemails and emails in this case to get an update on those urban water management numbers. And at that point, I'll schedule them to come in front of the board. That was a request I had last time, our urban water management plan consultant to come and give a presentation update to the board.
When?
So I'm hoping that depending on their schedule, I would expect maybe our next agenda, that we could have them come and just give us an update. I think that was, again, a request I heard from the board on that.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier I was asked about the IPAC, that's our telemetry system, remote monitoring system. The agreement in the contract was that no billing would happen until the system, until there's functionality. And then the contract breaks out all the different well sites, facility sites, if you will, by well, lift station, and tanks. So what we're seeing now is, for instance, in Black Lake, the entire Black Lake system is now in automated controls. And so it's on, it's functioning, those invoices have come through. I've asked for some clarification both from our staff, our field supervisor, and the consultant, the contractor on this, as to some more specific sub items, because what I'm seeing is it's coming through, like I see a full billing for Black Lake Well 3 or Black Lake Well 4, but we don't have a water table level in there. Water table level was not a system that the district had in place previous, and so this is an add. And so I think that's understandable, and I've asked them to get the controls in place that we need for operating our pump systems and our wells and our lift stations first, because this has gone on so long. So in any event,
earlier you were giving us well levels, the various levels around here, and I assume that you stopped doing that because you thought the IPAC system was going to come online and give us that. Since it hasn't and isn't, is it possible for you to kind of give us a, not today, but maybe the next meeting, the well levels, just so we can see what happened over this last rainy cycle and so forth?
I'll give a complete in writing with the manager's report, and also then we can discuss that at the next meeting. Okay. Sir.
And I could make sure that county gave us the rainfall and well capacities for the same, for the whole year, which makes a nice package.
Right.
Because our situation very much depends on rainfall. And
was there a question there or a statement? Okay. If there are any other questions on operations,
no.
We did. I've seen a few emails in the last day, and kind of getting back and to the hundreds, literally, of emails, and trying to catch up on things here in the last few days. I was prepared today as I'd like to be.
If you're done, I have a couple of questions. Have you finished your?
I have.
Okay. One question was, how you doing on hiring the conservation person? I noticed there was an ad in the paper, and I also noticed you have it online.
Right.
And the second question is, how much money do we have in supplemental water fund now?
The second question I can't answer off the top of my head, but I can get you a number for the supplemental water fund counting. I know we have that ongoing, and I can bring that forward for our next meeting. And as far as the advertising, we have been out in advertising, and we've actually had a few responses at this point. One that particular interest, it comes is from a local area. I think that's something that any candidate, I think the advertisement looks good. Candidates might think, oh, that'd be great. I'd love to move to California or move to the Central Coast, and they get here and go, oh, I can't afford home. So we have somebody who has responded out of Grover Beach. This is that Lisa let me know, and she sent in an application back to that person. But that's,
do you have a schedule, like a closing date for applications or a goal as to when you want somebody on board?
I don't have that top of my head. That's something that Lisa's leading this project more. But I know we do have a closing date for applications, and we're hopeful. I think we set a pretty high standard by asking for our bachelor's degree applicant. In any event, the initial response has optimism back. You know.
Did we advertise at Cal Poly? I'm just curious. But they have a career counseling center there that maintains contacts with graduates, and they're often people that know the area and are highly qualified.
I'll check if that was done specifically. I know we went out to our different organizations that we're members of, and went to the local papers, and we sent it out to the other local districts with a note. You know, we're not trying to steal anybody from you, but please put the word out. You know,
sure.
But if you're firing anybody,
right? We sent one to Los Osos. So,
if I can interject a joke, which maybe Mr. Brown would not be offended by. In Dilbert last week, maybe you saw where somebody calls another company and says, "So, your ex-employee has applied for us here. Can you give us any recommendation?" And they said, "Well, we don't comment on personnel at all. We just don't do that. I can make a few comments on the weather. Now, the clouds are going by very lazily, and people think they look stupid."
Listen between the lines when we get to that point of checking references.
That'll get you in hot water. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. LeBrun. Committee reports. Mr. Wynn, I believe you and
Mr. Trotter and I met last Wednesday to look at a proposal for commercial allocations. And we've asked for some information from staff, and as soon as we get it, which is simply a ratio of like the last 6 months residential use versus commercial use, so we get that sort of ratio, we will add that into our formula. What we propose to do is to incorporate what our board already agreed to do, to shift hotels and motels into the residential allocation and leave the residential allocation, despite that shift, at its current limit of 51 acre feet a year. We come up with a ratio, and we would take that ratio times 51 acre feet in order to come up with a yearly allocation for commercial. We would mandate that all new annexations, as well as growth within the district, would maintain that ratio, would not exceed it annually, with no rollovers into following years. That new annexation entitlements must permit residences as early as commercial. In other words, the ratio has to be maintained. We can't simply do a whole bunch of commercial without the residential to finish out the equation. And that we would stage multi-year allocations much as you do, as we currently do with our residential. It'll all be printed out and given to you as in draft form and for staff to look at and comment on. But that's the draft that we came up with. And as soon as we have the ratio from the office, we'll complete the document.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wynn. Any other committee reports? I think, Mr. Eby?
Yeah. The Supplemental Water Committee had a special meeting yesterday. There was reportedly an offer made to us to get an assistance on our supplemental water project from the Soy Ranch people. Unfortunately, the proposal wasn't a proposal to us. It was a letter given at the last minute to Cacho, saying that they thought that they could help us, help the county by putting a pipeline across the Bull Canyon Bridge and giving us an easement of the pipeline from there down to here. Well, if you looked into that detail and compared it to our current plan, that bridge is 12,000 feet as the crow flies from Highway 166 and 101. And a pipeline in that distance at $300 a foot would cost roughly $6 million. And that probably wouldn't be the crow fly wouldn't be the best way to go. So on the surface, it didn't look like it was a well thought out viable offer. So based on what we already have from Canon on our program, that still looks like the best route to go. And if anybody still wants to make us an offer, we suggested to Cacho that what they ought to do is give us an offer that gives us something sooner, cheaper, and lower risk, and we might be interested in entertaining it. We didn't see any of that in this so-called offer that we didn't even receive. Yeah. It didn't look like it would be sooner. It didn't look like it would be a lower cost.
They couldn't have been acquainted with the geography here. That's
no. Well, it was
ridiculous.
It was. That's being charitable to call it ridiculous, because I think it's worse than that.
It was just something they threw together.
I've got a copy of the letter.
Okay, that's fine. But my problem was, instead of asking people about us and our project, they should have talked to us, which they didn't.
Yeah.
And then they made their offer to Cacho, who doesn't even have jurisdiction over this. So it was done. It was really not done seriously if they wanted to help us in our project.
Who was sort of trying to engineer it on the spot.
So that's the way we left it. We don't have a proposal in hand. I don't think we do.
Yes. Anyway, okay, well, thank you. And any other committee reports? And seeing none, Joe is going to move to director comments.
Okay.
Starting with Mr. Trotter.
Okay. I received, as everyone did, a notice of an increase in the garbage fees. And I spent substantial time, Mr. Manager, making comments about the prior draft of this.
Yes.
Absolutely none of which made their way into it. And now I respect the fact you don't have to accept my comments, but of the 28 comments I made, some should have made their way in here. This thing is still substantially deficient. It's passed, and it's probably silly to even discuss it now, but it doesn't get the job done. It's confusing. I've had numerous phone calls regarding this from Blacklake folks, and who regard me as a representative from Blacklake, which I am not. But nevertheless, it's destined to be flawed, I guess, because the first draft was very poorly done. Forgive my outburst, but that's the end of my presentation here.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carter. Mrs. Worsing.
Yes, well, I have a lot of comments. It seems to me that I've got my copy of the mandatory trash agreement that, but it seems to have a lot of things in that I don't recall discussing in the ordinance, such as maybe, I don't know, maybe I just overlooked them, but it says as, for example, establish, let's see, for the day of collection of solid waste on the particular route on or after 5:30 p.m. on the day immediately prior to such collection and shall not remain thereon for more than 12 hours after it has been emptied. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of little things in here that I don't recall.
Yeah, that was in the prior.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I read it too because most people get it out there before 5:30, especially in the winter.
So then they're going to pick up, if you're not careful, they'll pick up all of your personal trash cans and just take them and throw them away. Which, and then in addition, an additional 96-gallon green waste wheeler is now $3.85 a month. And, you know, I don't recall, I mean, maybe it was just too much, too emotional for me or something. But I'm just really, I'm not pleased with this notice that was sent out. I think it's very like, whoa, you know, instead of trying to be a friendly thing. And then I wasn't able to locate in here, maybe it's not attached, is section 7.16.010, where it explains roll-off box service providers shall be subject to the requirements of section. And I'm not sure if that, exactly what that means.
As far as reference to section 7.16.010 for roll-off, I'm not certain either. We can, as council suggests, if the board so desires, we can have Mr. Martin come in, agendize an item, have him come in and explain and bring these sections in particular in front of the board.
So you know, like when Mr. Martin was here the last time, we were able to set out green waste in our own containers for 97 cents, but now it looks like it's prohibitive to do that because they're going to take them, throw them away. So then you'll be forced into taking, say, you know, that's not how you read it?
No, the way I read it, the only thing they're going to pick up is anything that they've provided for recycling that you want to change. In other words, if you're still using an orange bin for your recycle materials, they're going to replace that with one of the blue waste wheelers.
It says right here, or metal 32-gallon trash cans that you no longer need because you now use the wheelers.
That was poorly
written. Yes, but still, you know, like if people, because you don't always have, you know, a lot of green waste. It's just like certain times of the year. But anyway, I'm disturbed by that. And my other comments are is that I still see the quality of our water degrading. And little calcium rocks form very quickly and just in a couple of days at the bottom of our water bowls for our animals. And the water spoils very quickly and it creates a black mold. And when we've noticed that when we water our trees, the water actually kills the leaves. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So I'm getting kind of concerned about maybe, you know, not enough resource to go along with all the commitments of water. And let's see what else. I had one more thing. And then I have this article that a viewpoint that our supervisor put in. And he said that two board members from Nipomo Community Services District were, and I was just curious as to what, you know, what role district directors have in when it comes to roads, fire access roads, and because I thought that we, you know, that we have a role with water, sewer, and this was beyond our thing, so I was curious about that. And because I don't know, as what I was told when I first became a director was that I could go to any public meeting and fight traffic, I could do anything I wanted to, but I had to do it as an individual of the community, not as a director.
I think that's correct.
Yeah.
And I'm I'm familiar with, but not intimately familiar with the article you read from there, and I'm not sure that any statement to the contrary is being made there. If I'm being directed to investigate this and find out which directors and what statements were made, I need to hear that more clearly. I'm not sure what I'm being asked to do at this point.
Well, that doesn't say their names.
I have a question. Did the two directors present themselves as directors or citizens?
It says directors.
Did you present yourself as an NCSD director or just a citizen?
I was one of the two, and I clearly said that I was not speaking for the district.
So the article's flawed then.
And,
well, I read a couple of articles that were in the newspapers.
And what the newspaper people put in is not exactly what happened, and what Mr. Ashadjian wrote is not exactly what happened. My concern. Well, anyway, during director's comments, I'll go ahead and say, but I can explain my own role very easily, and you will not be offended by it, I guarantee.
Then I was curious as if the district's aware, staff is aware of a new car wash that's coming in on 263 North Frontage Road.
Haven't applied to us.
I know, I was curious about that.
263?
North Frontage Road. I can leave this with you. Because that's a large water thing that I would thought that they would have had to have come and...
Maybe that's part of that 5-acre development at Sandy Dale and North Frontage.
Sounds to me like he's gone and taken out a business license and because it's a fictitious to...
The guy who's doing the Sandy Dale thing is Steve or Rick Centauro or something.
Yeah,
like that. That's not what his name is.
Okay.
Yeah. Now he's Centaur. The Centaur Center is up Sandy Dale, lots.
That's Rick's Pre Service, isn't it?
Yeah, they just got purchased by new people.
Along Frontage, there are other jobs that are going on along Frontage where there's some commercial development that's been approved by the district. We have car washes in town. I think it's been discussed by the board before. I mean, a car wash can be a water conserving device, an automatic car wash that incorporates some recycling. This is...
Just brought it to your attention.
I understand.
Yeah, because if we all have to cut back, then I feel that we should be conservative in other ways too.
Thank you, Mrs. Worsen. Mr. Eby, director comments.
Okay, I've got some good news to report, and that is my own water consumption is down 18% this year. My latest bill. The good news is that I'm down 18%. The bad news is I didn't do anything. So I have a feeling that it might be because of the rain that we had, but I'm doing my part.
We'll check in the health of your meter and make sure it is functioning properly.
The other thing is I spoke at the newcomer's lunch, I guess it was last week, and told them a little bit about NCSD and water and the pitfalls of self-regenerating water softeners, and I think it was well received. I told them the big hazard was that the district could be fined $5,000 a day for doing what it's doing right now if they don't cut back on their salt production, and I asked for their suggestions, what they thought they should do, and I just left it at that, and I didn't hear any negative comments.
I was there, and I told Ed this. Ed did a good job, very good job, and a lot of positive comments. And his graphics are excellent. And I think Mike helped with the graphics. They're very, very well done.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn.
Okay. First, just to clarify, I did appear before the Board of Supervisors. I wear several hats, as you know. I had no intention of speaking on this until I saw the one on South Oak Glen, which was asking for development, which is in the district and is taking both water and sewer. And The thrust of my comment was that I wanted them to notice that this developer is taking water and sewer, that there is a water line and a sewer line that goes straight by their place, and that in future they would have other projects that would come before them. I specified no names. Same water line and sewer line goes by, and they do not intend to take services from the district. And I wanted to sensitize them to the fact that this is coming up. And that is in line with our policy. Mm-hmm. But I did not represent myself as speaking as a spokesperson for the board. That was Dan Pace's project.
Right.
And others will come up later. And when it first came out, it wasn't clear whether it was Mr. Holloway or Mr. Pace that was on the agenda. That is, street number. I didn't know the street number, so I wasn't sure where it was. So we did that. Secondly, I have asked for some information on the Summit Station, and I think we will discuss that in closed session, so I'll move on. I noticed, by the way, that the people we've contracted with to clear our, to flush our sewer lines, they do it annually. No?
No. We don't have a contract to flush our sewer lines.
There is a company which is going down the street and tying into our fire hydrants. And pumping water down the sewer lines.
Clay?
And they're just plugging in there. It's not our employees.
Now, we do use a contractor to do spot jetting, but there's no comprehensive sewer line cleaning going on. There will be some lift stations that are pumping these.
I walked up the street because I saw a lot of muddy water going down the gutter. They had opened up the fire hydrant and let it run, and it was, I'm glad that wasn't going through my water softener or my hot water heater, of course. And then they plugged it into the street where there's a sewer thing, and they were flushing down East Knott Street. And this was on, it was Monday or Tuesday. It was either yesterday or the day before, right? So I walked up and asked them what they were doing. They said, "Oh, they contract with they do it about once a year." There was no meter.
Valley.
No, it was not Valley. White trucks, blue logo.
Probably clay septic and jetting or something like that.
But there was no meter on the fire hydrant. They were just plugging in and running a fire hose down it. I don't know. Well, what they told me was not accurate then, so we'll watch them again.
Not to my knowledge, but...
They were filling up a tank. Once they ran it, then they actually ran it into a tank that they were pulling behind the truck, and they were filling up for something, so... when I spot them, I'll recognize the car again. I'll tell you the company name. I do appreciate your giving us copies of the letter from Mr. Parrott to the Board of Supervisors. I can tell you certainly that I talked with Mr. Parrott at Mr. Shadjian's urging over a year ago. This did not have to be delivered the day of the meeting. At that time, he said that he had two lines already across the river, which he offered to us. As it turns out, they do not go across the river. They simply go underneath the little section of the bridge that's just down in the bottom of the riverbank, but far down below the banks. And I'm pleased that we spoke out. Mr. Eby did an excellent job, by the way, speaking for the district. Had the chutzpah to ask the chair for a few more minutes because they'd thrown us a curve at the last minute, which she very graciously gave. And of course, they did vote it down. They voted it down, though. It had full support from our supervisor. This plan would have gone ahead had not the other four said up front that they would never vote for it. And so we changed the motion to say that it'll come back in July. So this is not a dead issue for the district, and we will face it again. I really dislike them trying to use the NCSD as a stalking horse for development, and not good. Let me suggest that all complex notices, I'm not specific to this one, all complex notices that we put out should have a specific format. You should have a one-page survey, in summary, never more than one page, in layman's terms, that says what it is, and then says, this is a little more complex, your situation may be different than general, notice that the official notice follows, and then give them all the complexities of the law and statistics and everything else to follow. But a one-pager would, I think it's essential. We had the October Festival last Saturday in Napomo Park. We had about 2,000 people there during the course of the day. It was very, very well received. CDF was there, of course, the Sheriff's Department, lots of other people. I wish the NCSD had a booth there. I think that's a highly significant opportunity to get our message out to the community. And I was very busy this year, but next year I will have more free time. I would certainly like to work with other members of the board. But I think it's just too big an opportunity not to be represented. And I hope we can do that. And last, I assume that everybody else received notices of the series of housing planning meetings that are going to be conducted by the county. They start this evening. There'll be four Wednesdays in a row in San Luis Obispo. I think it's important that that we at least, that somebody attends and listens to what's going on, collects material, and brings it back. And my last comment is, I really support the district manager and board members being able to go to the water informative convention such as you did. I would still hope that when you come back that you would take materials, photocopy them out, and distribute them widely among members of the board. And that way we get maximum benefit for the monies that were spent on that trip. You personally have benefited, which indirectly benefits us too, but the ones I've attended in the past, some of it is very, very useful information and can be easily photocopied, distributed. And I would like that.
I intend to do that and make some comments about my observations.
Okay. Well, it takes time, and I'm not assuming that it should have happened today, but I would like to see that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Wynn. I'll make mine very brief. As you all know, the Napomo Creek Watershed plan is out, and they're having a meeting at the Dune Center next Thursday, noon to 1:30. Bring your lunch. Be fun time. The Arroyo Grande Creek Watershed Plan, they will start implementing it, and they're having a meeting on October 26th at the Arroyo Grande City Hall at 6:30. Had a very informal meeting with our supervisor regarding the REC Community Center. And what he's looking for is organizations in the community to sort of try and get some consensus as to location. I was approached, the Land Conservancy was approached, I think everybody's been approached, but anyway, just to let you know, that was that. And of course the 2050 workshops are coming around. Maybe some of you got these things. There's one in the South County, November 5th, at the Grace Church in Arroyo Grande. It'll be from 8:30 to 1 p.m. Booked that day. And to mention the workshops on the affordable housing and things like that, it's amazing. Every Wednesday from now till early, including November 2nd, tied up. So it'd be nice if somebody attended these workforce housing workshops.
November 5th?
November 2nd.
Second, yeah. Okay. That's more.
This one here, the November 5th is a South County workshop for the 2050, in case you haven't received that. I think you were at the prior ones.
This is, oh, I see. Yeah, that's, I've been at the other three, yeah.
And I don't have any other comments, so that's my director's comments. So I guess we now get to move to closed session announcements. Mr. Seitz.
Yes, at this time the board will be going into closed session on three items for conference with legal counsel regarding pending litigation in each case pursuant to Government Code Section 549.56.9. The first case is SMVWCD versus NCSD Santa Clara County, case number CV770214, and all consolidated cases. The second is pending litigation, Maria Vista versus NCSD. Are we really talking about that one? I'm not sure that we are, but we'll announce it anyways. And third, NCSD versus County of San Luis Obispo Summit Station Land Use Ordinance and Environmental Impact Report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seitz. And at this time, I'd like to open it to public comment for any public comment on those items on our closed session. Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board and adjourn to closed session.
Continue that. Okay.
Until Seitz Johnson.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Seitz is here.
Okay.
I'm meeting with Shirley before then, so.
If you could report out from closed session, please.
Yes. The board just concluded its closed session in regards to the three items mentioned during the opening. They heard reports from legal counsel, but took no reportable action.
Thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. With that, our next meeting is October 26th. Meeting adjourned. Thank you all for your patience. This sucker took a lot longer.